Special education, just get on board.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Sponsored by the TBI, Survivors Network at tbisn.com.
All survivors, all the time. For automatic updates and everything brain injury.
Join now at tbisn.com.
The only all survivor and family network in the world.
Good. You don't need no fancy certification, just get on board.
Listen every night at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern.
And select nights at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Almost 60 shows monthly, bringing you unique perspectives and journeys of real lives affected by brain injury.
Sharing their successes and failures, giving you new tools and strategies coping with the effects of brain injury.
And now it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Found at braininjuryradio.com.
And now it's time for another live episode on the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello there, everybody. Happy Hump Day. This is your Wednesday Recovery Now host, Kim Justice. Glad to have you here with me tonight. Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we discover the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we'll have a featured guest like tonight, and others will introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussion. The second part of the show is open mic and some great indie music sure to inspire. And again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. If you want to know more about me, you can check out my website at inaflash.org or like me on Facebook at facebook.com/inaflash.org. Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week and almost up to 5 hours a day. But for sure, 3 hours a day, 7 days a week, and all of the live shows are immediately archived for on-demand listening. So you never need to be alone in your recovery process. I want to thank TBI Survivor Network for sponsoring Brain Injury Radio, and I want to thank my Recovery Now sponsor, Lash Publishing. Be sure to check them out at lapublishing.com. Again, that's www.lapublishing.com. And if you haven't heard me say it before, you must check out their free online magazine. Now, you do have a choice of paying for a subscription and having the hard copy sent to your home or signing up for the free online version. But you look over on the left-hand side when you go to Lash Publishing and you'll see Brain Injury Journey. And Brain Injury Journey debuted in April. And I think they have about 4 issues. In any case, their most current issue just came out. And it's about grief and changes in relationships and a lot of other great things in there. So I encourage you to check it out. I think you'll find it very helpful and informative. Also have a free catalog, an example of their tip cards I encourage you to check out. So drop them a line and check out their website. I think that takes care of our housekeeping for this evening, and I'm going to move right on to my guest. She's been very busy lately and got some of this tweener season crud that's been going on, and I felt bad for her last night, so I hope Kathy is feeling better tonight. But my guest tonight is Kathy Moeller, who is a certified brain injury specialist who works with vocational rehab agencies throughout the USA. In 1990, she experienced a brain injury and has been devoted to assisting others return to enjoyable, sustainable employment. We will be discussing outsmarting brain injury and returning to work. Kathy M. is founder of Cognitive Harmonics, Inc. and is an inventor of cognitive prosthetics. Find more information on her at www.cognitiveharmonics.com. And without further ado, I think we will bring on Kathy, I hope. Kathy, are you with me?
I am. Thank you so much for inviting me tonight.
Oh, you sound a lot better than last night. How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm doing much better. I just needed a good night's sleep, I think.
Yeah, you said it's just one of those nights. You just sounded really tired and kind of stuffy, and I thought that was me about 2 weeks ago. I felt bad for you, so I'm glad you're feeling better tonight.
Oh, I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Good. Well, you know, Kathy, when I first met you or became aware of you, I was a newcomer around here, and I would hear, Kathy, for those of you that don't know, used to have a great program on Brain Injury Radio, Kathy and Penny Condell and Gloria, and I was kind of coming in. We were just kind of passing the baton for a short time there. As I was coming in, you were kind of moving on to do some, there's only so many pursuits we can go after at the same time, and you were getting ready to move off, but I always enjoyed hearing your show, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that from back then, but I want to move up now. For those of the audience who didn't get the opportunity to hear you before, I was wondering if you could just give a little background about your brain injury and how you came to develop a relationship. What is your relationship with your brain injury?
Well, I experienced one. As opposed to people who have family members who are in service to others, I had an injury in 1990. Where I ran my Honda Civic headlong into a commercial bus, was not wearing a seat belt, and ended up putting my head through the windshield and then getting thrown outside of the car and hit my head again on the pavement. So it was a fairly significant injury. I had a broken femur and some broken ribs and other orthopedic types of injuries. But I ended up spending about 6 weeks in the hospital and then 5 months in residential brain injury rehab. It was a kind of facility that, if you've seen the movie regarding Henry, it was that type of a facility or the kind of place that Gabby Giffords was at. I'm told that with the level of injury that I had, people don't get that level of service anymore, but I needed all 24/7 support to relearn how to read and dress myself and all the rest of it. Then I had 9 more months of outpatient treatment and vocational rehabilitation. So I probably got about as good of cognitive rehabilitation therapy as it gets, and I needed every minute of it.
So you also had the opportunity not only experiencing it as a survivor, but having had that extensive of a program kind of gave you the inside track maybe on what you've pursued a little later on. But so you went through a very lengthy recovery process. Do you mind if I ask what kind of work you did before?
I was a marketing executive in New York. I was 38 years old at the time. And I pretty much focused my entire working life on having a career in New York. And, of course, then after I hit the bus and wasn't able to remember who I had talked to 5 minutes earlier, that all came to a screeching halt. So I still have that level of knowledge and interest and ambition, but because my memory and some of the other executive functions were so so much in disarray, it was really difficult to imagine how I was going to be able to get back to doing that, although I was determined from the outset to do so.
Sure, and I'm sure that was some of the lot of things that drive us through that recovery process, and you certainly, like I say, had a long one, but it sounds like from what I've heard in the last couple of years I've been here that there's not quite that extensive of programs available. What I'm hearing a lot of, and maybe you can contrast that a little bit with your experience, but what I've heard a lot of the last couple of years is that people are feeling like they're having these brain injuries, and obviously if it was, in fact, as obvious as yours was, not everybody's is, and they go through a whole another set of issues, but a lot of people are felt like they're kind of left out to hang without getting, no pun intended, a heads up of the kind of processing differences and emotional differences and a lot of differences that there will be in the future that they didn't deal with in the past. And so,
oh, that's absolutely right. In fact, my feeling is that we're more in the dark ages now, I think, than we were 20 years ago, because the rehabilitation facilities that were around back in 1990 basically closed down after insurance companies got the wherewithal to confine treatment to making you medically stable. Someone
right.
with my injury, and mine was a moderate injury. It was on the low end of moderate towards severe on the Glasgow scale. I mean, I did have to relearn how to read, and I couldn't process information enough to even dress myself in the correct sequence, that type of thing. So it was significant. But I've been told by speech therapists that I work with now that people with that level of injury will often get 6 to 8 sessions with a speech therapist, perhaps. Or they'll
exactly.
They'll get approval for assessment. And then
right.
basically get left to fend for themselves, and it really is a tragedy.
Yeah, that's okay. That's exactly what I'm hearing, and it is a tragedy. And I think that part of that, and one of the things we'll get into outsmarting the brain injury just after this, but you know, those are the kind of things that really undermine confidence and blindside you, you know, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, physically, and those are the kind of challenges. I'll go back to one thing about your past, and then we'll move forward. But you were determined, as a lot of us were determined, to go back and be who we were before, or you know, step back into our old skin and our own life and carry on as if something happened, and now we went through the recovery process and poof, we're back on the track we were running on before. And I think a lot of us have a rude awakening, an uncomfortable realization after whatever period of denial is going to be allowed in there, depending on the resources you have available to you or support groups that you have available to you. I think are some of the determinants about that. But when did you try to go back to your old job, or did you know sometime in recovery that wasn't going to happen? Did you go back for a little while, and what happened? What was your come to Jesus moment when you knew that you weren't going to be able to resume your old life?
Well, when I got out of the hospital and the orthopedic and the, you know, the immediate medical issues had been taken care of, what hit me is I thought I had gone crazy. And I actually called an old friend from high school and wanted to know what psychiatric hospital she had gone to treat her. She had had bulimia, and she was in a psychiatric hospital for a while. And I wanted the name of her doctor because I was convinced I was going crazy. I couldn't find my way home in the car. I shouldn't have been driving, but I was driving. And in my familiar neighborhood, I couldn't get oriented to find my way back to the house. I couldn't I would get into arguments with people about, they said that they had called me last night, and I could have sworn that they hadn't, and I was calling them a liar. I thought people were stealing all my stuff because I couldn't find things that I could have sworn I knew where I put them. Mm. And my only conclusion was that I was crazy. And,
now, in all of that, I'm sorry, in all that therapy you had, they didn't have enough knowledge of brain injury, even in the most comprehensive therapy had?
I'm getting the timeline
before.
I was in the hospital for 6 weeks before I went to brain injury rehab. So I was discharged from the hospital, and they recommended that I would go to the rehab facility. This is in Concord, California. But I refused to go because I didn't think I needed it, right?
I see.
One of those situations. So I was back in an apartment. I was staying with a friend. And thinking that, it must have been all the medication I was on. You know, I was pretty heavily medicated for the surgeries that I'd had. So it was at that point when, actually it was an occupational therapist from the rehab facility that I had been referred to who knocked on my door one day every couple of hours until I answered the door and said, let's just go check out the facility. I know you don't want to check in, but let's just go check it out. Mm-hmm. And I walked into the doors, saw 40 or 50 people that looked awfully familiar in terms of the the affect that they had and the issues that they had, and I stayed for 5 months.
Wow!
So it was at the rehab facility that I got the insight.
Okay, good. Now, because I didn't have the benefit of doing that, I'm wondering, and a lot of the audience out there similarly, or people just listening who might maybe recent caregivers or just trying to find out more about brain injury, when you said you went in and you had instant recognition, can you kind of explain that a little bit to the audience? Because this was somebody who just thought a couple weeks before they didn't need it, and then they went and saw the recognition and was convinced that you needed it. So can you tell me what you saw?
I had a very clever case manager. She introduced me to a woman who was a patient there at the rehab facility who was dressed very nicely, very articulate, well-educated. I thought she was a therapist. She was explaining to me how they were teaching her how to relearn how to read. Mm. I could decode. She couldn't even decode the words. When she was reading, she wasn't able to put the words together to make any sense. I could read the words. I just couldn't tell you what the sentence said. So when I saw that she had been there, she'd maybe been there a month, I realized that I was in the right place.
Hmm. Okay, so fundamentally,
it was really another survivor. I was able to meet someone who I could relate to, and I saw that I wasn't crazy, that I just had a brain injury.
So the peer support or peer recognition and then support really did make a difference. That was one of
critical.
The things I was, interested in your story, because I went 17 years without that, and so
I can't imagine.
Me either now, after a couple of years here, but somehow I bumbled through it and went the same route that you did. So I don't want to take you off point. I'm going to drop back to that for just a minute. But I went that same route you did. I was convinced that I must be crazy because the doctors told me that my procedure was a success. And I looked normal and talked normal and walked. And so I was dismissed to go back out in the universe, not told, no clue, and never met any other survivors. And so I just kept my mouth shut. The expectation was that I was broken, I got fixed, and now I was going to resume my life. The people around me didn't get a playbook. My family, that was there. I was single at the time and 35, and they didn't get a playbook. I didn't get a playbook. We all just kind of went back out and thought, geez, that was really a hellacious experience. Now let's put the elephant out of the room and go on with life. And that's just kind of how it was. And then when I started having problems, I went the same route as you. I thought that I must be crazy because I wasn't getting validation for in the traditional medical model. I would go and, you know, talk about the memory and sensory overload and full basket syndrome, which I didn't have names for them back then. I was just describing what those things are like, those sensations are like, and how they were different than before I had my brain surgery. The best answer, well, there were two most common answers. One was it'll resolve in time. I needed to have patience.
Another interesting one.
Yes. Yeah. And the other one is here's a prescription, you know.
Right.
Here's a prescription.
What never ceases to amaze me, Kim, is, you know, you and I are probably both what I call invisibles. I mean, from the minute that I walked out of the hospital, as soon as I stopped limping, I looked like I was okay. My word-finding problems were not as severe as some. My speech was okay as far as the outside world could tell. But internally, I knew that things weren't working. What I find interesting is that those of us who are invisibles, even some of the professionals will look at us and think nothing's wrong. In fact, I had an encounter with a neuropsychologist at a conference one time, and after one of the sessions, we sat outside the lunchroom, and we're just chatting, and he said, "But you know, Kathy, you don't look like you've had a brain injury."
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that was meant to be a compliment, but what I wanted to say to him, and I can't remember now if I did or not, is, well, what does having a brain injury look like? Do you mean because I'm not slurring my speech, or I'm not struggling for words, or I'm, you know, my affect isn't completely flat, or I'm not, you know, my tone is okay? What does brain injury look like? And the fact of the matter is that there are so many of us who are invisibles. You know, we came into our brain injury with good vocabularies, and so we speak well. That doesn't mean there's nothing, quote, wrong or nothing that's gone sideways. It means
right.
that we are an invisible, and we're invisible to the professionals as well, I think.
I know, yeah, I'm convinced of that, at least around here. I don't know, some others have had good luck down that road. I just haven't had good luck at all here where we are, or with the support, you know, the peer-to-peer support community. So I felt very blessed to find Brain Injury Radio when I did, because it was like a 17-year delay of however long it was for you when you walked in and you got that recognition with that one survivor. For me, it was just a little bit different because I went from nothing for 17 years to just being overwhelmed with from nothing, mm-hmm. you know, feast or famine, that kind of a dynamic. And so there was just so much to hear and absorb, and the recognition and the familiarity and the comfort level were there because there were people that understood. And for the first time, I didn't feel crazy, but it was really sickening, a lot of what I heard and the processes that people had to go through, still have to go through, by not having some of these tools that you and I are going to talk about tonight, and by not having the availability of peer support, which was one of the reasons I really wanted to get involved in this capacity, to have a way to help. A lot of us have, you know, compromises, whether it's mobility or vision. I'm not a night driver. You know, a lot of the support groups, well, first, we don't have any here, but if we did, I was fortunate to meet somebody in our capital city an hour away. There's a one woman, and she's a great woman, a one woman brain injury association, and they do have one meeting a month. And I met somebody, and he invited me to come down. Now that the clocks have changed, maybe I will be able to do that. But when he asked me in winter, it just wasn't going to be practical for me to commute at night when I really can't see to drive an hour and a half there and an hour and a half back in the evening. So just wasn't going to work for me. And it's odd because our town is three times the size of theirs, but, you know, they put them way out, one of them way out in the middle of the state, and we're on the east border, and then, you know, one down where the Brain Injury Association, you know, association kind of conjures a large organization to you. This is one woman working out of her house that's the Brain Injury Association. And so, you know, not a lot of resources here in Middle America, but in any case, so when you did then go through the training and it was validated for you that you weren't crazy, that this is something very familiar to people who have suffered brain injury and were afforded the different types of therapy that you got. Then did you go back and try to resume your old life, or did you have a clue
at that point it might not work? And what ended up happening is I had excellent therapy. I had speech therapy that was based on compensatory skills training, which is not like, hold on just a moment, I've got a frog in my throat. The focus was on things like make sure that you write good memory notes and organize your space, make sure you have visually clean space, little tricks and strategies like using clear bins so that you can see what you're looking for. So it was all very much compensatory. It wasn't of the brain train, luminosity, you know, exercise your brain until it gets better kind of approach. Although we did have things like attention training, but those kinds of exercise always made me feel less than, because it really pointed out how much I couldn't do. You know, listen to a newsreel in the background and cross every third T and dot every fourth I while you're reading this you know, document. And the idea was to improve your processing speed. Well, exactly. To me, it was like jamming, you know, bamboo up my fingernails and saying, well,
right,
see how well you can adapt to, you know, this pain. So I came out of there, you know, and I was appreciative of the fact that they allowed us to kind of pick and choose what resonated for us. And some people did like the brain exercises. I did not. I chose to focus on compensatory skills. And I was really glad when I got out, because that was the only thing that allowed me to go back to work at all. I was issued a day timer and was coached to write notes, stream of conscious, from morning till night. You know, I got up this morning, I had bacon and eggs. I met with, you know, therapist Mary Smith, and we talked about such and such. I did this in brain education class. You know, went to, you know, this recovery group, whatever it might be. So that after doing that a while, even though I thought I wasn't all that memory impaired, I realized at the end of the day, when I looked over my notes, how much I would not have remembered had I not written the notes down. So it became very clear to me from early in my residential rehab experience that I had to capture information in order to be able to do anything at all with it. And, of course, I took such good notes that with too much information, and I had the typical problem of, now where do I find it after 2-3 weeks of note-taking?
Yes,
so
exactly.
I started color-coding things, right?
Oh.
And then I'd have these long to-do lists of things to do for work, things to do for voc rehab, things to do for, you know, I mean, it was just insane. And I finally had a speech therapist who said, well, instead of having to-do lists, why don't you schedule things at particular times in pencil? And then if you look at it and decide you need to move it, you can, but at least it's scheduled for Tuesday at 2 o'clock. So I abandoned to-do lists, and I don't use them now. I have, you know, in my program, I have, you know, I kind of allow one portion of my bionic brain program to have a to-do list. But it's got an immediate option to schedule it if you want to schedule it, because otherwise we just blow those to-do lists off. So anyway, by the time I got done with my rehab, I had a day planner that was working pretty well for me, but I couldn't use it after discharge to get that. It didn't want to work. So anyway, I came up with what I called which allowed me to use a day planner. Section in it, the talk to section.
Kathy, your phone's kind of cutting in and out. I'm not sure. My mic seems to be steady, but your phone's cutting in and out a little. And it looks like the caller dropped. Hopefully she'll call back in. I thought her sound was starting to fade in and out a little bit. I hope her phone didn't run out of ink. Are you guys able to hear me okay? Jenny says she must do, oh, there she is. She's back again. Okay. Let me grab Kathy back and get her back with me. It sounded like the phone was kind of going in and out a little bit, and then your call just got dropped off the board.
It just dropped,
Okay, well,
so
sorry about
that. So what part of that litany a litany of experiences did I leave off at when the line went dead?
Taking notes, and then eventually you took notes and didn't really feel the need to do that anymore at a point? Is that what you were starting to say?
No. What I had meant to say was that the day planner that I had that was a standard issue wasn't sufficient for getting back to work. So I ended up taking the time to make what I called a brain book for myself. It was a paper day planner, all right, but it had a green tab for my routine so that I could remember that green meant routine. And I scheduled all my daily, weekly, monthly, and periodic routines from that section. Then I had a talk to section, so I had a page with everybody's name on it. I did a couple of work experiences before I actually went to work, so that I could have a page with everybody's name on it so I could look at it, and even if I didn't remember what I wanted to talk to them about, I would be able to know what I wanted to talk to them about because I'd written it down. So I basically crafted for myself this thing called a brain book. And after a couple of years, I started sharing it with other people in various support groups and at conferences, and people started asking me to build them brain books. So that's how my first business got started. And all the while, I did go back to work. It certainly was not at the level that I wanted to work. It was at an entry level again. I was working kind of as a, basically a receptionist in a marketing company. But I was able to function well enough that I could manage working 4 or 5 hours a day and, you know, keeping the job. So I was always determined to continue to, you know, advance. And then finally, when Seattle University offered to turn BrainBook into an electronic product that can be used on an iPad, that's when it became really easy to, you know, do keyword searches and various things. So now I had the benefits of this paper planner that was designed for someone with a brain injury, but it was also much more maneuverable. It was smaller than the great big thick book that I carried around, and I could find what I needed in it. So that's
now,
basically the short story.
Were these brain books individualized like a template so that it would be applied to each person's situation, or were you actually structured? I haven't seen an actual brain book.
The brain book is it in template form. In other words, every brain book was the same insofar as that each one had a talk to section, each one had a routine section, each one had a steps card section. So you could break down multi-step tasks into simple sequences. Each one had a schedule and memory notes page. So hold on just a minute. I've got a granddaughter here. I've got to redirect just a
Well, her call is still here. I think she's just taking care of family business. This will be fun, though, if we keep getting interrupted trying to remember what we were talking about. But that's great. So there'd be templates that would help give bite-sized pieces that would adapt to the needs of each individual using the book. So it sounds like and she didn't call it journaling, but the taking notes, and it would be interesting. I've never done that before, actually taken notes, and then at the end of the day gone back and reviewed my day to see how much of it I remembered, to do kind of a check on my memory. My memory issues usually come up when I'm trying to think of something, or I just met somebody, got introduced to 3 different people, and you know, shook hands and heard their names and have no idea what their names were a couple of minutes later. So are you back with us, Kathy?
What I liked about the book, and it really was based on the rehab that I'd gotten, was the idea that we needed to have a structure. We needed to have a place to put our thoughts and our different tasks. And there's a principle in speech therapy called chunking that I really responded to in terms of having, it's kind of like a grouping concept. Like, what do I do at the beginning of of a typical day? What do I do at the end of a typical day? Rather than just having all kinds of details floating around in my head willy-nilly. So mm-hmm. I took that concept and I kind of grouped things based on what are the typical groups of things or groups of tasks or concepts is maybe the right word that an average person needs to live life and then also go back to work. So what I've come, and anyone who, I mean, if you take a look at the work I've done on my bionic brain, you'll see that there's a structure to it that's based on what we normally do during the day. We talk to people. We have emotional reactions to things that we may want to deal with or take better control of. We have routines that we need to schedule or change or alter. We have steps that we want to do to log on to the computer or God knows what, you know, 15, 20-step task we have to do for work or personally. We have projects we want to manage. So all of those things are organized so that when you go to that particular section, whether it be a paper planner or an electronic version, you have everything that you need all in one place. I don't want to have to look on the Awesome Notes app to find my notes and then try and remember where I put my document, and I can't remember if it's a PDF or a Word document or if I attached it to an email, right?
Right.
I don't have that kind of brain anymore.
Right. Well,
I want it to all be in one spot.
Exactly. Well, I think that is a huge, great point because I've heard Craig, and a couple other people say, use the terminology that we lived in a world of post-it notes. So we would write those thoughts down real quick that we didn't want to forget and post them somewhere. And pretty soon, you know, the whole office looked like post-it notes, and then, you know, they start losing the sticky and falling off. And so organization is a problem. So, you know, I think
critical.
A lot of people meant well by trying to take the notes you're talking about, but the organization process wasn't there. So it sounds like that's a lot of what your book is doing, is instead of doing the post-it notes and trying to remember where the dang things are, you just got to keep track of one thing. And if you can find that book, then you've pretty much got it all in there in an organized fashion. So, you know, that, I guess I want to stress again to the audience that I think that's been one of my challenges, and certainly a lot of other stories that I've heard is just being able to, you know, get organized. And a lot of times that focus and frustration, you know, like I said in the beginning, a lot of us met well without any guidance and did what seemed obvious, which was, you know, try to take little crib notes for things that we were going to have to remember, but then God help you try to find them later. You know, I'm going to put it here so it'll be safe in my upper left-hand drawer, but then 3 days later couldn't remember where that safe place was. I remember
right.
I took those notes and they were imperative, but I put them somewhere safe so I wouldn't lose them, but...
Well, that's why one of the things I wanted to talk about when you invited me to do the program was what are some of the strategies that a worker can use to get back to work or to keep a job that are what I call little tricks of the trade. And, I mean, absolutely I would love it if everyone who wanted to go back to work would go to their voc rehab office and get a bionic brain. That's not going to happen. The survivor in me wants to reach out to my peers and say, there's other things you can do to keep that job. One of them is to get organized with the basic essential tasks you need to do at work, which isn't just the job duties. It's things like if you start a new job, I know one frustration I had when I started a new job is filling out the new time card. And I would beat myself up because I couldn't remember such a simple thing as to how to fill out this particular time card. And then I realized that that's not something I should be tasking my brain with. I don't need to memorize how to do that. All I need is a sample of it, or maybe a steps card that says step one, step two, step three, step four, and have all of my steps cards in one place so that whenever I get confused about what steps to take, I look there, right? So anyone mm-hmm. can get a binder and make a step section and put a pocket in it and have all their steps cards for all the complex procedures that they have to do at work in one place. It's a no-brainer to take a piece of yellow. You know, I use yellow for important things. That's a color code in my system. So it's pretty easy to take 10 or 15 sheets of yellow paper and put them in a binder and call it your talk to section. And that, mm-hmm. at the top of each page, put down the names of the people that you work with. And I want to talk to Nancy about, the bookkeeping problem. And I want to talk to Joe about the widgets. And I want to talk to Mary about something else. And then when I'm done having that conversation, I use an orange highlighter. I call it oranging out, to orange out the fact that I've talked to them. And then I've got my notes for what they said. And I've given up trying to remember all this stuff because it's not going to happen anyway. I don't care how much practice I get. My brain is not going to remember significantly, well, it's not going to remember well enough to do the kind of job I want to do when I could easily use a prosthetic, whether it be a paper one or an electronic one.
So when you went back and tried to do the job that you had done prior, that wasn't going to work, and so you went at probably a less stressful going back to work.
I went in at an entry level, and it really wasn't the smartest thing I could have ever done, because it's kind of a myth that just because the work is lower level means it's easier to do.
Right.
In fact, my first voc rehab experience was answering a multi-line telephone at a marketing company. And that was impossible to do. I couldn't remember Joe was on line one and Mary was on line two. That was impossible. What I ultimately did, and this is really the key to my functional recovery to get back to the level that I wanted to operate at, is I carved out a piece of my former job at a level that was satisfying to me, that until I could master it. And in my case, it was doing marketing plans. So I volunteered for a theater company to do their marketing plan, because that was something that I had done many, many times before, although I would run a staff and do the budget and hired salespeople and, you know, traveled and did all the rest of it. There's no way I could do all of that anymore. Besides, I had dyscalculia and couldn't hold on to a number to save my soul.
Right.
But I was able to carve out a piece of the job at an appropriate level that gave me some satisfaction. And that's really what I coach voc rehab counselors to do now with people who operate at a high level or who are very educated. You know, don't mm-hmm. tell them to do car detailing if what they had done is they were engineering for a car company. That's
right.
Just not appropriate. But
well, I think
pull
that's
out a piece
what one
of the job
the,
and master.
Yeah. I think that's one of the big fears as we continue our conversation is that there's a lot of, not that there's anything wrong with those jobs you're talking about, but there's a lot of people that were, you know, white collar professionals for 20, 30 year career. And once they get the rug pulled out from under them and go through all the psychological stuff and all of that, you know, the thought of being forced to go work as a cashier at Walmart is, well, it's also absurd. Well, it's not interesting, but it's also like you said, it's hard. Who knew how to run a cash register before, you know?
Well, and the fluorescent lights and all the rest of it. I mean, the fast food thing is absolutely not something you should be focusing on doing. Well, one thing that is really important for all of us to recognize, I think, is that the voc rehab counselor and the voc rehab office should not be in charge of the process in the sense that they're running the show or they're leading the way. And that's part of the problem, is when we go in with a brain injury and we don't know what we need, we don't know how to ask for what we need,
mm-hmm.
we don't know what's available that could be helpful, the counselor mm-hmm. knows less than we do in most cases. I mean, there's some that have really become specialists. I'm saying across the board, the average voc rehab counselor doesn't know how to help us.
Right.
And if we can go into that meeting with a sense for what we want to do, how we want to do it, what our fatigue factor is, what our limitations are, what assistive technology we may need, that really is like a breath of fresh air to that counselor, and it gives them something to work with. Then they can apply all of their assessment procedures and see if it's a good job match and decide if they can fund it based on the realistic expectations, you know, all the buzzwords that are, you know, are around in that, in their business. I mean, they have a job to do too, and they can't just be throwing money around willy-nilly. But if we can go into a meeting with some sense of where we're going and how to get there, we've got a much better shot at getting the services that we need.
Well, I think that's really important, important point to bring up too. Now, I didn't get to have the benefit of vocational rehab, but what, 15 years later, my dad was in getting some testing done, and I happened to sit in with him, and it seemed like the doctor had ordered the tests that were going to be done, and it was the standard fare, you know, a speech therapist, and which I didn't realize the jobs that a speech therapist encompasses, vocational rehab. And so they went through the lists of 10 things and spit back how many you can remember. And, you know, and I was listening to my dad, who has Parkinson's and obviously is older than I, and she'd do her list of 10 words, and he spit them all back, and I was stuck on the first word. You know, I'll never forget, the first word was apple, and then she, you know, apple, da-da-da-da-da-da, she's saying her list of 10 words. He turned around and spits the words back at her, and I'm just sitting in the background, you know, the fly on the wall going, shit, apple, apple. Well,
you know,
after
and
apple?
This,
I missed
really
this
points
portion
up a very,
of therapy.
This points up a really good point, though. If we're being tested for a career, you know, for picking a future career on the basis of what we can remember, I mean, if we're getting a standard neuropsychological assessment or a memory test, and it's assumed that you have to have a good memory in order to do a particular kind of job, we're going to fail just as, and I use this metaphor lovingly, if I were a paraplegic and I were walking into an office and expected to work, but someone said to me, well, sorry, Kathy, we're going to see how well you do in this office, but you don't get to use a wheelchair.
Right.
Everyone would look at that and say, well, that's ridiculous. This person can't walk. They have to have an assistive device in order to be able to function. And guess what? If they have the proper assistive device, they can probably get around that office pretty well. And if they're in an outdoor job and they have a power chair with the, you know, those I call them fancy wheels, but those kinds of treads on them where they can actually get up and down mountains, they can do amazing things. It all depends on having appropriate technology and appropriate training.
Right.
I use that metaphor with brain injury all the time. If you want someone to do well in a particular job, you don't test them in the absence of them having their assistive devices and their assistive technologies. You teach them how to use assistive technology and then see how well they can do.
But they don't tell you. That's apple and, you know, apple and orange. That's why I as we continue, it will become more clear to people. But that was the standard fare of testing,
right,
offered to someone who didn't know. It was prescribed by the doctor. The next test went on, and it was one of those, you've got 12 minus 3 plus 6. Okay, I was a financial consultant. I worked with numbers all the time. I couldn't figure that out in my head quick enough. So exactly what you're talking about was happening with me, and it wasn't even my therapy. I didn't get any therapy. But 15 years later, when I'm listening to my dad's and he's firing out the things, I'm sitting there in the background going, okay, this would be funny if it wasn't downright spooky
exactly,
to me.
Exactly. Well, that's why we have to start taking charge now. And I've been doing this a long time. I mean, I'm working on, this is going to be my 24th year of recovery now. And it still saddens me to see how much of the dark ages we're in. Now, you're lucky there in Nebraska, frankly, because Nebraska Voc Rehab has been very much on the cutting edge, or the bleeding edge, as they may think of it at some point, in terms of providing assistive tools and assistive technology to individuals with brain injury. Not only my product, but others as well. They've got an excellent assistive technology program, which ATP for All is what I think it's called. And anybody who doesn't know the Job Accommodations Network, JAN, that's another good resource to go for looking for appropriate assistance and strategies, tactics, and accommodations as well. But the fact of the matter is, we are still in the dark ages. And as those of us who have experienced some success with recovery and, you know, perhaps have invented some tools or have used some good tools, we can now help our peers go to their voc rehab counselors and say, no, this is not the kind of testing that's going to help me. And if they can't convince the powers that be of that, then they go to a peer support person or a peer mentor. I mean, I do this kind of peer counseling all the time, and I help coach people to get through the voc rehab process. You know, oftentimes we'll get counselors who will say things like, well, let's see how well they do at this job before we invest in any technology. Well, again, that's like saying, let's see how this paraplegic can crawl around the room before we get him a chair. That's just ass backwards.
Well, and the fact that the confidence level and the fear level is there and you allow somebody to fall flat on their face, that's realizing their worst fear and going to make it even harder
right.
to go back and tackle it again. So I'm going to then just ask the logical to me, you know, when you went to the other job in a similar industry, but that didn't work out, do you recommend that a person talk and go through a vocational rehab program before they tackle the job market? Because there's people that don't even know, like nobody suggested any assisted technology for my dad with some of the things that he is going to be dealing with.
I think it's,
you know,
critical. I think it's critical. The critical piece is not only getting the help, but getting the right help, which means if
right.
you're talking to a counselor who you don't have confidence in, who is not supportive of your, you know, I mean, because if we've been going to support groups and we've been talking to people like Kim and Kathy and Penny and Gloria, and we've got our arms around what we need in order to get back to work, if we, you know, through the luck of the draw, get a counselor who isn't willing to listen or isn't willing to help us, you ask for a different counselor. If that
mm-hmm.
doesn't work, you ask for a supervisor. If that doesn't work, you go to the client assistance program. And basically what I want to make people aware of is the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. We have rights under the Rehab Act. Those voc rehab agencies exist in service to us. That doesn't mean we can walk in and get anything and everything that we want. But what it does mean is if we know what we need and we know what we want, or we've got a pretty good idea, and we just happen to have a counselor who is not educated or interested or sensitive to what those needs are, because this is a very special kind of disability, then
mm-hmm.
there are resources that we can call upon to get our needs met. We don't have to be afraid that if we don't say the right thing, we're not going to get any services, because we, you know, there are ways of working that so that you can get what's needed, you know, in a pleasant, professional, and appropriate manner. But
so can
that
you
fear
tell
should
me,
go away if we have with knowledge.
Right. And I'm just curious in my own case, because you brought up my home state. I had occasion to go meet a neuro at University of Nebraska Medical Center at UNMC, so they should be the one in Nebraska who would you know, in the university environment, have some of those, be a little more progressive in their treatment. And I spoke to a neurosurgeon who was, geez, he's on all the commercials now, you know, tops their hype and brain injury at the moment, you know, before that we're more known for blood cancers at UNMC and transplants. But in any case, now they're big into stroke and brain injury on TV. But anyway, very qualified neurosurgeon. I spoke with him and I asked him about some of that help. I had been to a generic neurologist and found that like, I don't know, talking to a potted plant. He just didn't even seem to be on the same planet. So I checked out this prestigious surgeon down at UNMC, and when I asked him about some of the things you're saying, he looked at me rather blank and said, you might check with the girls at the front desk. And I said, yeah, mean the ones making the appointments for people? And yeah, he did.
Well, here's the problem,
he was clueless.
Yeah.
So where in Nebraska would I go that's
go
so
to
great?
Rehab. Yeah,
and
you go to voc rehab. The neurosurgeons, you know, when people ask me who are the right professionals to talk to for help, You know, we've got speech therapists, occupational therapists, vocational counselors, neurosurgeons, neurologists, neuropsychologists, neuropsychiatrists. They all have their particular specialty. But when it comes to functional brain injury recovery over time, virtually none of those professionals deal with that issue.
Exactly.
None of the people that I worked with 25 years ago know what Kathy Moeller has been up to for the last 25 years. All they did was they treated me for the first 6, 9, 12, 14, 15 months, whatever, and that's what they remember leaving off. They don't travel in our circles any longer.
Precisely.
They don't understand the power of peer support. So that's why my feeling is that we have to take the initiative, network as a community for what we need and want, and then take that to our vocational counselor, because they're in the position to be able to help us. Number one, they have a vested interest in helping us get back to work, and number two, they have the funding. Insurance companies aren't going to pay for assistive technology, even if a doctor were to prescribe it.
No. Now,
but
I've got a couple.
They can pay for job coaching and assistive technology, and as long as they have appropriate information and you can make the case that it will help you, and that, you know, if they've seen that you have a good work ethic and you've probably got the ability to be successful, then you've got a shot at it. It's not a simple
mm-hmm.
task. It's not a matter of just going to the right professional and having them, you know, prescribe a magic bullet.
Well, and that's why I want to be very clear with the audience, because I see some confusion in the chat even. Is vocational rehabilitation a state agency, or is that like
yeah.
looking for a shrink trying to find the right boat?
Every state has a state vocational rehabilitation agency. They're all over the country. Every community has one. It's funded by federal dollars, and it's run by the states.
Okay,
and their mission is to help individuals with disabilities return to gainful employment.
And that,
and that
state vocational rehabilitation agency,
mm-hmm.
okay,
yeah,
run by each state. So I would look up Nebraska State Vocational Rehabilitation Agency, and I should be able to find this place, as other people would type in their state and put in that verbiage.
Let me do this right now while I'm on the computer. I'm going to do vocational rehabilitation.
Got it.
Rehabilitation. It's coming up. There's all the state offices that I go to all the time. If I go to Vocational Rehabilitation Nebraska. We've got a brain injury conference coming up here in a couple of weeks. I didn't know if you knew that or not.
I do. I just found that out.
Nebraska Vocational Rehabilitation. There it is.
Okay, good. Well, I just wanted to clear things up for our audience listening and the people in the chat room who had some question, because that's how bad it is, you know, when you're talking about asking doctors and so forth, and how difficult it is to be your own advocate when you're clueless. And so what you just told us is, no, it's not like going out and looking for, you know, who the best shrink is, or finding a neurologist who's dealt specifically in TBI. There's actually a state vocational rehabilitation agency. So,
right. And thanks to people like you and Penny Condell and others who have built these networks, we can now talk to each other, and people can, you know, email me or email Penny or email any number of people who've been through Voc Rehab, who are now vendors to Voc Rehab, and get some ideas on how to talk to a counselor and what to ask for and what to say and how to present themselves. Because, you know,
right.
there's no point in reinventing the wheel each time. I mean, I made mistakes with the three agencies that I went to. I mean, I was in California, Oregon, and actually I was in Oregon three times. And that's the other thing that people don't realize, is you can have a disability, be employed, and still go to your Voc Rehab agency and get services if you need services to maintain your employment, if you're in danger of losing your job because you've got memory
mm-hmm.
problems. You don't have to work full-time necessarily if you've got cognitive fatigue issues. So it's
right.
not an all-or-nothing situation. You can be very creative in how you come up with ideas for working.
Have you found jobs, you go to the other side then, and let's say, and we're going to color in some of the middle blanks here in a minute, but have you found that once you've done those things, and maybe you do need some assistive technology, that employers, now it's hard, I spent my, virtually my whole life self-employed, and so that's not quite fair for what the rest of the people out there have to deal with when they're walking into a company. Have you found that most companies are amenable to facilitating after you go to all the work of going to the...
Well, yes and no. I mean, it really is all over the map. And especially when you're dealing with the whole idea of reasonable accommodations under the ADA, if you come into a company with the accommodations in hand, they're much more likely to be responsive and receptive to it. Now, I had an experience many years ago when I needed to take my laptop computer into the office. I was in a classified advertising department of a newspaper, and I couldn't memorize all the classified ad codes the way the other operators could. But I was able to enter them all into my computer so that if somebody wanted to do a garage sale ad, I could just type in the word GAR in my laptop and see that that was code 3234. And so then I could turn to my office computer and enter the ad. But at first they didn't want me to bring my computer in because they said, well, everyone else is going to want to bring their computer in. This is before tablets and smartphones. But what I did is I said, well, they're not disabled and they don't have a right to bring in their computer under the Americans with Disabilities Act. I do. So, you know, they, I guess, went back to the head office and talked about it and said, well, I guess we'll let Kathy do this. And it worked out really well. In fact, I'm grateful that that happened because I eventually went to the local university and asked to take exams with my computer. And they kind of scratched their head and said, well, that doesn't look appropriate. You know, we need to make sure that you're on an even playing field with the other students. And I said, well, then go knock all the other people on the top of the head with a baseball bat so that they don't have a memory and we'll have an even playing field. Right. On the other hand, if I can use my laptop at work to function on the job, why can't I use my laptop at school to function taking this test? You're welcome to test me orally afterward as if, you know, I were in a graduate program and you wanted to make sure that I had mastery of the material. But even my doctor looks up, you know, medications in the, you know, on a electronically. I mean, there's no reason why I should have to memorize all the facts and figures. And they agreed to it. And then I used that same argument with a real estate agency here in Oregon. So I got my real estate license with the accommodation of using my computer during the test. But it takes some doing the first time, and the second time or the third time it becomes a little easier. And now I can coach people on how to do that for themselves if they want to take a graduate level course and are afraid that they won't be able to memorize everything. Well, don't memorize everything. Go to your student services office and argue for using your computer or your iPad as your assistive device to compensate for your memory deficit based on the fact that you have a certifiable disability. So, but you don't learn that stuff unless you're talking to other people who've been down that road, and the doctors are completely unaware of what we have had to do to survive in this world.
Yeah, and I think that's most of the frustration, at least that I've run into, not having the peers to ask, not having the professionals. In fact, when I was talking to my counselor the other day, you know, the word she used to me, and it was about a doubt I was experiencing now with some things that are going on, and she said, well, you know, part of that is that you really feel like you've been failed by the system. Because, you know, again, not making excuses, but I didn't know. Back in 1995, we didn't have a computer on every desk, and
right,
I couldn't read a whole book anymore. And I was told by the professionals I was trusting, first of all, most of you know here that when you've gotten your bell rung, you're not at your sharpest, you know, place in that first year are better anyway. And when it's out of the blue and you hadn't even heard the word, you know, TBI or aneurysm or acquired brain injury before in your life, and then, you know, it's at your front door and the tablecloth's been pulled out from under you, and there was no such thing as Google, and the doctors were clueless about where to go, you know, it was really divine intervention if you tripped on somebody who could find their ass with both hands and help you out back in those days. So, you know, pardon me, but frustrating, you know, frustrating to walk around in the dark. I subbed on a show Saturday night and I said it's like feeling around, you know, being in a dark room all of a sudden. Maybe you've known your house all your life, but those times that the power goes out, like in bad weather or something, your house is so much darker than it normally is because even the street lights aren't on, so it's pitch black. And now start feeling your walls of something that you know. That knowledge is kind of in there somewhere, but you might have forgot if you bought a new end table or, you know, a new lamp or a new piece of furniture. But you're feeling your way through the pitch black trying to figure it out. It's very frustrating and emotional, and more of those kind of things that stack up, the harder the task is to do. So, you know, I was telling her the other day, I've gone through years where I've been, you know, at a practitioner or a doctor almost constantly out of desperation and needing something. And then I go through years where I don't have the energy to do that anymore because it hasn't helped in the past. And I don't want to play that. And so I just try to adapt. Even with
the Voc Rehab situation, I talk to a lot of people who have tried it. They've had bad experiences or they've failed at their jobs maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 times. They just don't want to do it anymore. And I understand that. But I think if you still have an energy to do that and you want to do it differently the next time, there are ways that we can work with our peers to figure out how to make it successful. So
I think you can't
go flying blind. You can't go flying blind. You have to know what you're doing, go in there with a plan, you know, have an agenda, know what your rights are, know what your options are if you're not getting your needs met. You know, just become familiar enough with the way the system works to be able to navigate.
Well, I say, my heart goes out and my prayers go out to people in our community all the time, because I laugh and say tongue in cheek now, it took me 17 years writing a book and becoming a radio host to find out what what you're telling me. It's taken me 2 years of being a radio host to hear what you're telling me right now. You know, that there was an agency a couple of years ago I could have called if I would have tuned into your show sooner and known about it. But I was hearing, and I don't remember, we're going to stay back on your topic about outsmarting the brain in vocational rehab, because we've had a lot of talks about Social Security lately, and we've got a lot of questions on the board right now, and I know you can't stay all night, but somebody asked earlier, and one of the things, did I hear about Brain Bucks on your show?
You probably heard about Brain Bucks from Penny.
Okay.
She talks about Brain Bucks having a certain, it's like brain energy.
My God. Calculator. Yeah, I know what it is. Mm-hmm. I really hung on to that Brain Buck word because, I mean, when a person does have a budget of only so many Brain Bucks, that's kind of what I was talking about right here. If those Brain Bucks, you know, were being spent on something affirmative like what you're talking about, a clear direction that you get from another peer who's down that road and they can navigate you down that road and spend the Brain Bucks there instead of chasing your tail into frustration and exhaustion, that's going to be the difference between it working and not working, I think. There's nothing wrong with the tools.
Absolutely.
But if people don't know the tools are there, you know, then they're not doing anybody much good.
What it's similar to is, you know, a lot of times, young people who are so-called disadvantaged, all right, they've grown up in poverty or they haven't had family members who've been to school or don't have much education, they're at a complete disadvantage when it comes to navigating the system for getting into college.
Right.
And those of us who have been through that system. You know, I went to University of California, Berkeley, and University of Chicago, and, you know, I understood all the whys and wherefores of all that stuff. And I had been married before, and I, my stepdaughter was trying to figure out how to, you know, get into a good college. It was pretty easy to help her with the exam and with the SAT preparation process and all the rest of it. If you're coming into that completely green and you don't have family or friends or a network or a community around you who can help you do that, it's going to look like an impossible task.
Right.
But that's the beauty of the work that you and people like Penny are doing, because you're connecting all of us. You know, I don't have to live out here in Medford, Oregon in isolation, building my little system and you know, passing it along to the local people here that I happen to run into. We can talk as a larger community about things that have worked. Maybe there's someone out there listening who wants to go get certified as a brain injury specialist. And lo and behold, you can take your brain injury specialist exam with your laptop computer. They didn't think it was such a good idea when I first suggested it to the National Brain Injury Association. They thought that was kind of an odd request as an accommodation. But guess what? They figured out that it was not such a bad idea when I made my case. I'd love to see a lot of people with brain injuries take the brain injury certification exam and become brain injury specialists. But I know that a lot of them are afraid to take the exam because of the memory issue. And
right.
I don't blame her. It would be a horrible test to take without some assistive technology.
And since you bring it up, there's a lot of people that don't understand what assistive technology is. They think that it's up to them to try to compensate for these deficits on their own, and don't know how to do that, don't even understand that the field of assistive technology, I mean, they think of things like handles to get in and out of the bathtub, you know what I mean? That's kind of
right.
What they're thinking about for assistive technology, wider doorways, things like that. What type of things, and I've heard quite a few of them in my tenure here, but for the audience who is not familiar and very interested, now you've told them they can go to a state agency and get some guidance from people who have been down the path before, rather than in the traditional medical model where they're really not familiar in many cases. So you've steered us to that direction, and now give us a couple examples of assistive technology, including your own, just a little more elaboration on your brain book and some of the other things that you've seen. And that I want to reiterate, if I understood it correctly, that you're saying that the ADA is, the law is going to be on our side in being able to use this assistive technology. If we walk in and an employer looks at us cross-eyed for using something that the other employees don't get to, that the law is on our side.
Yes, it is. It's just, but like I said, we're still in the dark ages. We recognize now that a person has a right to use a wheelchair to get to a bathroom or a restaurant. We're not
mm-hmm.
quite there yet when it comes to using assistive technology when you've had a brain injury. So, and to answer your question about what kind of assistive technology is there that's out there, the standard approach to using assistive technology for individuals with brain injury is to adapt the existing technology and teach someone how to use it. For example, a computer could be considered assistive technology, or an app such as AwesomeNote or Evernote. Or
mm-hmm.
there are a variety, especially now with the tablets, there are a variety of apps that are considered good for individuals with brain injury. The application that I've developed is specifically for brain injury who are going back to work. So I've taken all the bits and pieces that I have felt over the years to be important and created a specific application just for that purpose. I don't know that anyone has ever done anything even close to that, because I don't know that there's been any interest in doing that. So in terms of having assistive technology specifically for people with brain injury for going back to work, all I can tell you is I'm the only one that I know of who has done that.
Well, and I like it.
If you want to use other applications, they're out there, but they're for the general public. So
right.
If you can use them, then I'm sure, and they're probably a lot less expensive. So I'm sure that the you know, that the funding is going to be more available for the apps that are less expensive. But that doesn't mean that they'll necessarily work if you've got a memory problem and can't remember where you put stuff. So that's
exactly. Well, that's what I really like about your book, is that you've built in the element of organization so that everything is kept in one place. Instead of wondering where 59 different things are, they're all in that one book. So if you can keep your hands on that one book, you're really screwed if you lose that book, boy, but because everything is in there. But when you keep your hands on that book, it's all there. You know, you're organized, which organizational skills are key.
We've even come up with a solution for that. Everything is backed up, and I provide insurance for people. So if they lose it in the first year, it's replaceable, and the information is still intact. Because I've built it with the understanding that it's going to be for people who lose things. Right.
Right. You had the insight ahead of time.
Hopefully, after the first year, you're gainfully employed, and you can pay the $50 a year that it costs to keep the insurance on the darn thing.
Right.
So anyway, those kinds of things have been kind of built in up front. Now, what I do want to say, though, is like I'm looking right now at an assistive technology partnership website. This happens to also be in Nebraska. But you can go to the assistive technology partnership website. I think it's AT for All or something like that if you wanted to Google it. The listing on there says you can obtain information about assistive technology and appropriate funding sources, borrow equipment on a trial basis, purchase selected equipment, consult with specialists, receive training, and receive on-site support at home and schools and on the job. State you're in, look for the assistive technology partnership in your state. Now, I know that it's part of the Voc Rehab agency in Nebraska. I think it is in some of the other states, too. I know in Washington it is. But for each state, it's probably a little bit different.
But they may be able to tell you or refer you at the vocational rehab if they're really a good vocational rehab center. I would think that some of those things go, you know, they are linked and go hand in hand. I would hope that they would at least be able to refer you on.
In fact, a lot of the offices are mandated to go through their assistive technology people to make recommendations. The counselors themselves might not make a recommendation. Out here in Oregon, we don't really have that kind of luxury because it's not that sophisticated as a state. So our counselors, for example, will make a recommendation or let people know that certain technology is available. But certainly, if you as the individual with the disability go to the counselor and say, this is technology I want you to explore, then they will explore it. You know, they may not recommend it to you cold because they may not even be allowed to, but you can certainly go in with something in your hand and say, this is what I want. And that would hold true for my product or anybody else's product for that matter.
Exactly. I want to just break in for 1 minute, Kathy, because we are getting ready to take any questions or comments that you have. So you can call in to 424-243-9540. Make sure to press 1 if you've just been listening and you have a question or comment for Kathy. Also, if you're not on the board already, again, that was 424-243-9540. And I just want to go back and reiterate for some people that weren't at the beginning of the program that one of the fears I've heard, you know, time and time again about going back to work you know, is people who had gotten used to their occupation and are scared to death of having to do something completely and totally different. And what you're saying that I think is reassuring is I think of that Gallup, I don't know if you ever did the Strengths Builder test that Gallup mostly was marketing to corporations because there's more money in it than doing it for the disability community. But taking the strengths and parts of a job that you are familiar with that you did know and capitalizing on them, but just carving out a portion of your knowledge base and not being expected to go back on the whole boat and perform at the same level with all of the elements of your original career, but being able to carve out the portions of your career and start from there. So it doesn't have to be a completely unfamiliar, intimidating process if you find the right people to help you with that. And according to you, if you're able to kind of put that together through a peer advocate and then go to the vocational rehab agency and be able to be a little more specific about what your needs are, they're better going to be able to help you. And this isn't something that goes through your doctor's office or that is a referral to the hospital's vocational rehab after you have a brain injury. It's something beyond that, because they really don't do, from what I've seen, anything but the CAN tests, as you've indicated, aren't fair to do at that point in time, because you're really comparing apples and oranges at that point.
Correct.
And
you've got it.
People aren't on the same page. So I find that extremely helpful information and hope that soothes some of the worry out there, because I know that's a lot of things that hold people back. Les, and I don't know if he'll talk about that or not, and I know you don't have time to go through the whole thing, so I'm going to start letting people on. But, you know, they were talking about learned helplessness, that once you get on benefits, they suck you in so that you are afraid to go back out. Well, one of those fears is if you know you can't do what you were doing before, and you're afraid of winding up in a place with fluorescent lights and a place you can't stand too long or sit too long and wind up being a cashier when you've been a, you know, financial consultant. Things like that contribute, those fears and insecurities and the confidence being shaken contribute to that planned helplessness. It's not just the government agency, but it's feelings we have about ourselves, because when we've gone to ask for help in the traditional medical model and not gotten it and been forced to go down the you're crazy path instead of being validated for an organic injury and haven't had the good fortune of running into peer advocates and knowing about these specific agencies you can go to that can target exactly what your needs are, then it is very intimidating, and your chances of failing or wanting to break free are, the odds are really stacked against you unless you have the kind of information that you're talking about. So I'm really glad that you've been on tonight to share, but I know you're tired, so if you don't mind, I'm going to start letting on some of our questions and comments.
That's fine.
But is there anything that you want to say before we do that, or do you want to wait until
fine.
After?
I'd be happy if people were calling in.
Okay, good. All right, let's see who, area code 610, who do we have on the line?
You have Madeline. Kathy, you may know me. We've touched base on LinkedIn a few times, and we have mutual friends in Maria Romanis and a few other people.
Okay. I believe you.
Okay. So there's a couple of things. I think you've done some marvelous things. I've heard great things about your product, and I agree with a lot of what you said, but Voc Rehab, only 6% of the people with brain injury use Voc Rehab. And part of it is because Voc Rehab doesn't really understand brain injury in most states.
That's true.
Furthermore, what happens is, and this is one of the big gaps that I work to try and address, is that people will get out of a rehab program, even an outpatient rehab program or a hospital, and it can take as much as 8 months or longer for Voc Rehab to get to base one with you. Most people with brain injury don't have the fortitude or the organizational skills to chase Voc Rehab.
I'm sorry, you're
down.
Saying it takes them 8 months to do what?
To get to the first base, just to get to assessment.
Take my word for it. My experience.
In this state, that's absolutely 100% true. And it's more and more so now because there's more people who are on disability than ever before because of the economy. So they're overwhelmed. And I don't, this is not a diss of Voc Rehab because there's some really good people there. There also, you know, there is a financial obligation if you either get funds or you have an income. You might have to pay for services that you receive.
Right.
It's not all funded. So,
correct.
And then You know, so there's a couple of issues with rote rehab. And then the other problem that a lot of people with brain injury have is that there are memory issues, but there are also behavioral issues, such as rigid thinking, initiation,
right.
Tangential conversation, logorrhea, you know, just inability to focus. And some of those issues are also helped through the support of a speech-language pathologist or neuropsychologist who work with you with a cognitive behavioral approach. And
I agree.
I really think that you need that sort of team approach. And unfortunately, many rehab programs don't work directly with voc rehab. Now, I know in Massachusetts, voc rehab is actually in Spalding, for example. So they have an office there, and they work very directly. And, of course, the other issue is that voc rehab so often provides jobs that are hourly wage, and many people can't survive. I mean, they will lose everything. And so it's actually
when you
more
say
costly.
When you say they'll lose everything, are you talking about losing their SSDI?
Many of them will choose to go on SSDI over voc rehab's hourly wage position.
But I guess the reason I'm asking that is because you don't necessarily lose your SSDI if you're making an income of, you know, several hundred dollars up to $1,000 a month.
Right. If it's less than $1,000, but a month, approximately about $900 a month or something.
However, it's up there somewhere. I don't know exactly.
What happens is that if you're able to survive on SSDI, to go out and to do a job with hourly wage, for many people, not all people, but for many people, the level of effort to get through all these things and get all these other services and the cost for transportation becomes such a burden to them that it's not worth it for them. They would rather fix that.
No, and I understand that, and I'm not saying that this approach is for everybody. But what I do want to point out is that you don't have to be afraid of losing all your SSDI. Let's say, for example, you're a former executive, in my case, I was a former marketing executive, and I wanted to do something meaningful in my work life besides sit home and collect my SSDI. What I'm saying to people is that there may be a way, if you have appropriate assistive technology, so that you don't have to fight for looking for all that information in your head, or you don't have to reinvent the wheel for all of the organizational tools you need at the job site. Maybe there is a way where you can carve out a piece of your old job and write marketing plans or brochures or be a copywriter. Carve out a piece of that old job that makes sense, perhaps freelance it. But you don't have to assume that you're going to do an entry-level job that you need transportation for when you might be able to work from home, when you might be able to get the support that you need. And it will be a task to go through the voc rehab process. I'm shocked that it takes 8 months to even get through to the assessment phase in your state, but so be it. I'll trust your judgment on that. It's just that I don't want people to assume the worst when there may be a way to carve out something that works for them. And I agree that there are all kinds of issues.
I agree. And I live in Pennsylvania, and we have the Pennsylvania Assistive Technology. And for people there, even if you can't get the technology through voc rehab, they also have a no or low-cost interest loans up to $1,000 that you can purchase certain technology. So, I mean,
super.
It's certainly worthwhile to try. I think the problem that I see for a lot of people with brain injury is that you really do need an advocate or a support person to help you, because the process can be onerous and difficult. And
absolutely.
I think it's so much overwhelming.
She conceded that in
the
very beginning. Yeah, she conceded that, Madeline, in the very beginning. But so is the process.
I work with the agencies. I mean, I work with agencies in 5 states. I work with the VA. It's daunting. It's absolutely daunting. But it's less daunting if you have a peer who can advocate for you and actually go into a meeting or help you, you know, with a piece of literature or a resource, or can turn you on to the Job Accommodations Network and what page to look at for the accommodations that are appropriate. You know, I mean, those kinds of things can be real lifesavers.
The other thing I'll say to you is my experience with corporations has been they have been very unforthcoming in accommodations. Many of them forbid people to tape record or record meetings with any kind of device at all. There's a lot of hostility about it, and it's a really negative area that's been very problematic at the moment.
I agree. Tape recording is an issue. In fact, I've had neuropsychologists who refuse to allow a brain-injured person to record their sessions, which I find to be really interesting because you've got a person with memory impairment and, you know, you want him to go home and have had a meaningful session. But, you know, it has all to do with litigation and everything else, and I do understand that. But there are also maybe other ways of, I mean, it's not just your resources may not just be tape recorders either. I mean, that is a particularly sensitive one. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been an interesting experience. I work from the business side and trying to get businesses to accommodate people, and I've just found very little willingness to make significant changes.
The most interesting problem I ever had was with the National Brain Injury Association. Here I'd had the accommodation at my local college to take tests with my computer. I had gotten my real estate license through the real estate agency here in the state of Oregon. When they first told me, well, you know, we don't let people who speak Spanish take a Spanish dictionary. Why should we let you take a computer? And my response was, well, because speaking Spanish is not a protected class under the Americans with Disabilities Act. You know, I mean, that, you know, I go through that. And then I go to the National Brain Injury Association and say, I want to take my computer with me during the test. And they said, we don't think so.
Yeah.
And I had to say to them, excuse me, this is a fight you do not want to have with me. I guarantee you don't want to have this argument with me. And they didn't. You know, they realized in very short order that this was not appropriate. So I give them credit for that. I'm a little surprised.
The minute you mention the ADA, that gets their antenna up, I think, when you let them know that you're aware of the ADA and not just some chump to be bullied, you know, that puts a little power behind you if they're familiar with the law.
The fact of the matter is that those of us who want to be carving out this new territory, it's going to be challenging. And even the people that are, you know, coming in behind and are saying, well, you know, so-and-so has this assistive technology, I think it would help me and I want it too, they may still have a battle because the particular counselor that they're working with may have a problem with it, or the agency doesn't have the funding, or they're at the wrong part of the budget year, for Pete's sake. You never know what the obstacle is going to be, or maybe there's an order of selection directive coming down. But there are a lot of reasons why something might not work for a person who's in the voc rehab process. It has nothing to do with what they need and what would be appropriate for them. They might approach a different counselor and get a different answer. They may approach an agency in a different community and get a different answer, at a different time of year and get a different answer. So it just depends on how much you're willing to fight and how much you're willing to grapple.
I think that's true, and so that's why I think it's important for people to have someone on their side, because you have to also fight appropriately. Because if you become belligerent, you're just categorized as a person with a brain injury.
As a belligerent brain injured person.
Right.
Exactly.
So it's
a fine line, and again I feel for people, because once you had a brain injury, the last thing in the world you need to do is become a lawyer for your rights. I mean, it's overwhelming.
But that's where, you know about the client assistance program, right?
No,
the CAP program?
I actually didn't know about that.
Well, let me Google that right now. The client assistance program exists in every state, and it's part of it's a specific component of the voc rehab process that supports the individual with the disability to advocate on their behalf with their voc rehab agency. Hold on.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Tell me what that's called again. I'm sorry, ladies. I'm going to type that into the chat. You want to tell me one more time?
Client Assistance Program.
Thank you.
But there's one for each state. So we have one in Pennsylvania called PACAP.
And I don't know how effective it is in your state, but it works pretty well in ours.
I actually had never heard of it, and that's interesting.
Nebraska has a particularly active one because I delivered a product a couple of days late one time because the post office didn't deliver it when they said they were going to. And I got a call from Nebraska Voc Rehab saying, well, we've had a client assistance program complaint that you didn't deliver the product when you said you were going to. And I ended up producing, you know, the receipts from the post office and, you know, to demonstrate that I had done everything in my power to do this correctly. So they were advocating on the part of the client to get their product when they were promised their product.
See, now, again, you know, this is interesting, but most social workers won't tell you about this. Voc Rehab doesn't tell you about this. And most
The client assistance program, if they place a phone call to the supervisor in your office, they don't want to have CAP complaints.
Right.
They're going to do everything in their power to make sure that they've served you appropriately. Or if the counselor has not served you appropriately, that something has been done about it because they don't want to have CAP complaints.
That's interesting. Boy, I've been knee-deep in up to my eyeballs in advocacy for 10 years, and I have never seen PA CAP before this.
Client Assistance Program CAP is established under the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. I'm reading this off the website right now.
Yes.
And is administered by the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. CAP is not attached to the same department, Department of Workforce Development, as the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation.
Yeah.
It's a separate part.
I'm looking at it. I'm amazed. I mean, I'm telling you, I've been down to D.C. I've talked to people on the national. I mean, I've been to everything you can imagine. I know people in LEAD, IRM, you know, Disability Rights Network, all of it. And I have no one has ever mentioned this ever.
Here in our state, when you sign your vocational plan, there's actually a paragraph at the very bottom that says, if I have a problem with this plan, I know that I can call my client assistance program advocate. And their number is such and such.
I have to look into that.
And it may be just fine print that we all blow off because, you know, by the time we're done signing a 7-page document, we're probably pretty blurry-eyed. But I tend to read all that stuff.
I sat on the governor's task force in Pennsylvania, and one of the things that I recommend, and I still wish that we could do it, was the notion of support brokers. So a person who's not affiliated with any agency who takes a person with a brain injury and helps them identify, this agency is what you need for this. This is a person who does this. This is where you can go for this.
Excellent idea.
These things are so bifurcated that it's just impossible to keep track of them all. Unless, of course, you use bionic brain.
It's an excellent idea.
Madeline?
Go ahead and finish your point. I was just going to say thanks a lot for calling in. I promised Kathy that I would move her through tonight. She's got a couple more calls,
but you're very knowledgeable about this great dialogue. The National Brain Injury Association is doing invited me to do a webinar on April 17th on the same topic, on the topic of going back to work, outsmarting your brain injury. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out. If anyone wants to participate in that webinar, you can go to the Brain Injury Association website.
I will look into it for sure. Thank you very much. It was great listening to you. Thanks a lot.
We will probably talk at some point.
Okay, take care.
Probably. Bye-bye. I hope so.
Thanks so much for calling in, Madeline. And I know somebody who knows something about assistive technology, and he's our Southern gentleman, and I think you've probably met before. Hi, Les Paul. Have you met Kathy? Of course you have.
I think I have. I'm pretty sure I have.
I think so. The name sounds awfully familiar.
He's our Tuesday host.
You probably see it in a guitar store.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Well, first of all, I just want to say there are some very good things about VR, but I'm going to share my story a little bit because I've had a very hard, rocky road from not just VR with every agency, and I've had multiple traumatic brain injuries, 2 brain aneurysms, and several brain surgeries, and when I went to VR and I went to other agencies, they looked at me and said, Mr. Morgan, your disability is too severe. You cannot go back to work. They would say you cannot to me. And I said, but I drove here in my car, dressed up nice. I got here. It took me years to be able to do that because I was non-functional. They didn't think I was going to survive. I beat every odd that was thrown at me. But the system worked against me. I would go into VR, and the counselor, his name was Mr. Cool. And I started saying, Mr. Cool, you're the most uncool person I've ever met because you're heartless. I walked in here, I dressed nice, and I have a severe headache. But I walked into your office, and he said, Les Paul, you risk losing your disability benefits if you even try to work. And that was years ago when I first went. It was a 17-and-a-half-year journey from going from a senior operator to falling through the cracks of the earth with a brain aneurysm, and then on a slow, winding recovery, starting to try to find a way to go back to work. And I was turned down by every agency, including VR.
Did you use your CAP counselor or your CAP advocate?
I didn't know about CAP back then. I was a newbie to it back then. I know all about it. We have CAP where I work at Walton Options for Independent Living.
Oh, okay.
And we talk about it all the time. But on top of that,
sometimes the last resort.
Well, on top of that, I'll go to the now. Someone I'm very close to has gone to VR. I actually took this person three separate times in the past 4 or 5 months, and they keep telling her to quit trying. And when
then she should be going to her CAP counselor.
That's what I was telling her this week. But
yeah,
she's very disheartened, has a college-level education, and they turned her down.
I understand that. I don't mean to be unsympathetic. It's just that if the system exists to screen out, well, it doesn't exist to screen out. How can I put this fairly? Voc rehab counselors. We think that voc rehab counselors' job is to find us work if we're disabled.
Yes.
And I understand that that's a common understanding. I look at it a little bit differently. If I'm sitting in the vocational rehab counselor's chair, and I've got management that I have to report to, and there's budgets that have to be done, and there's numbers that have to be met. My job is to close successful cases.
Yes.
So that means that if I've got John and Mary to talk to, and John looks like he's going to be someone I can assist with a certain amount of funding, he'll be able to be employed, maybe not at the level that he wants to be employed at, but I've got some job developers that I work with, and I think they can get him a job because they've got relationships with the right companies. We're going to, and not to say that every counselor is going to do that. I'm going to get a lot of hate mail from counselors here in a few minutes. But,
I probably will too.
Well, and it isn't that it's not that their heart isn't at the right place. It's just that they've got a job to do. And if you've got someone with a severe injury who maybe is a little forgetful, or they miss appointments, or they come in one day and they want to be a graphic artist, and the next day they want to, go back to college and why aren't you funding me 4 years of college to become a biologist? And by the way, this is what I was thinking about yesterday. They're going to look at that person and say, this person is not going to be a successfully closed case. I can't work with them. Now, they may not tell you that to your face, but basically they're going to, their case notes are going to be that, their job expectations are unrealistic, or they're not capable of doing the job that they want to do, or they have a belligerent attitude, or they don't have a good work ethic. I don't know what they're going to case note. But the point is that if we can look at the job from the counselor's perspective, then it's our job to help them realize that we can be a successfully closed case. So we have
to
bring to them.
Can I ask a question right there?
Yeah,
I'll give an example. My last, and it was a somewhat successful VR visit. It's actually one of the most successful I've ever had because I was just turned down for everything for many years and looked at like, go away, please. And finally,
okay.
I wrote a complaint letter to VR and said, I do not get any services over and over and over again. Who do I need to contact? And then I found the right person to contact. And so VR called me and they said, we've got something for you. And so I go to VR, nice counselor. I liked him. I didn't have any problem with the way he spoke to me or anything. But without even, I said, I was telling him, I'm trying to work my way off of disability. I say this on Brain Injury Radio all the time. I want to be off of disability. I know I'm capable of it. I work at Walton Options for Independent Living right now part-time. I'm going for full-time. I want to be somebody that can prove they make it, not just to prove it because I know I can. But the counselor came in and says, I've got a pen for you, an Echo Smart pen. It's a very nice pen. I think it's about $120. And I said, a pen? What is it? Why a pen? He said, this is a pretty cool pen. It helps you with your memory. It helps you organize and all that. And I said, I do like it. It doesn't do at all nearly what I was asking. I have problems staying organized. I was looking for maybe software for my own laptop that I bought. I actually bought a new laptop recently to do the same thing. I'm just going to try it myself because I can't get the VR anyone to help me get the right software to help me use my own computer.
Well, maybe they don't. They might not know. The good news is that someone was actually able to hand you a piece of assistive technology and say maybe this is appropriate. In my experience, an Echo Pen is not the answer to a lot of people's issues.
I know.
Now, I have a vested interest in my little product because it's called My Bionic Brain, and I sell it to Voc Rehab agencies. But the only reason I invented it was because there were no other solutions out there that met all the needs that I felt needed to be met.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to go to your counselor and say, well, what about my bionic brain? And they say, well, no, that's not going to work, or no, we don't have the budget for it. Well, then we've got something to talk about. But then you get them to talk to me, or if it's somebody else that has a different product, you get them to talk to them. You get them to check out the references. You know, there's a whole process that you might have to go through. But the solution to your problem is probably not the Echo Pen.
Exactly. Well, let me just tell you what happened right after I got it. I had it maybe a couple of weeks. I get a phone call, and they said, okay, this is a survey, and not a survey, where they call to see if you like your Echo Smart Pen. I said, yeah, I like it. It's helping me some. I actually do like it. It records. It helps me remember things from meetings. It'll write down on the computer and pen what you're writing, and it does help me somewhat, but it's nowhere near what I truly was wanting to really help me. And I told her that, and she said, no, you're going off point. And I said, well, I'm trying to tell you. And she said, no, Mr. Morgan, we need you to say, yes, you got the Echo Smart Pen. I said, yes, I've got it. And we say need you to say, okay, a couple of other questions, and then it's pretty much case closed. And that was it.
Wait a minute. Who's asking you these questions? Voc Rehab?
Voc Rehab Counselor in Aiken, South Carolina.
Well, something's wrong with this picture. I mean, that just, you know, your case is not closed because you were forced to say that you liked a particular piece of assistive technology.
I was actually saying, is there another option for the question and answer thing? Because I would like, that lady actually got angry with me over the phone when I said, is there another way I can choose another answer? No, you need to answer this.
Yes or no. The very first thing that I would suggest to you or anybody who has that experience, and I'm sure there are people who are listening who have had that experience, is, well, thank you very much for your time. You hang up the phone, you pick up the phone, and you call the CAP person and say, I just had this conversation with somebody, and I need an advocate.
Okay.
The only option you have. Only option.
Well, thank you.
Lesson, I'll bring you back. I want to hear more about that, but if you don't mind, thanks. I promised her an hour, and she's going on two, so we just have a couple more calls.
And
I'm sorry you had that experience. It's really unfortunate. I am sorry.
It isn't, and I would say dial again as your energy allows, because it really does. It is sad when you're already tired and fatigued. You don't know whether you're on foot or horseback. You take a leap, and you get those kind of answers. It's very easy to get frustrated and want to give up. Yes,
that's why you need
exactly.
a peer advocate. You know?
Yes. Exactly. Okay, I think this might be somebody that you know. Area code 509, are you in a wind tunnel?
Yeah, I am. I'm actually on my way back from a support group.
Oh, good. Well, I'll
just
guess.
Remember, Tuesdays and Wednesdays
are
support group. So. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi, I'm familiar with the area code. I'm not familiar with the voice at this point.
Right. How are you?
It's Craig.
I'm fine. Who's this?
This is Craig.
Hello there.
Ah, so Yeah, good to hear you. I'm sorry I didn't listen to the beginning. I do support groups every Wednesday, so I'm usually at support groups during her first part of her show. So have you already visited Penny, or are you already, or is that still coming up? I can't remember. I lose track of time.
Yes, I'll be up next week. I'll be up in Tacoma next week after the brain injury the brain injury conference in Portland on Friday and Saturday.
Oh, very cool. Exciting. Yeah, I know. Cheryl, you know Cheryl Green down in Portland area, right?
Doesn't ring a bell.
She's with the artist, does the movies and the art. She'll be there too. So Lois, you guys connected because I was telling her about the bionic brain, and so she had some questions, and I sent her one of them flyers, and of course she had more questions, so you'll be hearing from her.
Cool. Okay, well, Craig, we've got one more caller, so you drive safe, and maybe we'll catch you when you get home.
Yes. I've got about a half-hour drive, so it's good hearing your voice, Kathy, and I'll listen to the full show from the beginning when I'm tomorrow.
Thanks for calling in, Craig. Drive safe. Good thing he's got one of those. You can tell when he's in a wind tunnel when he's driving. Okay, we've got one last caller and just under 10 minutes to let Kathy off under the two-hour mark. Somebody has had their hand up a long time, and I apologize tonight. Kathy, you've just had more callers than anybody's had in a long time, so you're really stimulating interest and feeling in what you're talking about tonight. But this is our friend, Allie. Allie, meet Kathy. Welcome to the show tonight.
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
Hi, Allie. Good, thank you.
Hi. Good, good, good. I am so grateful for your presence on our One Kim show. And, Kim, great interview. I've really enjoyed the information, and I'm really ecstatic to delve deeper into the offerings of your program. Is it an app or software, or what is it?
Well, it's considered an application, but it's not an app like you would find on the App Store. It's a specific application. It's pretty involved and sophisticated and complex. It does work only on an iPad, and it's an application that you would buy through my company. You can go to the website. It's actually at mybionicbrain.com, and you can see a little introduction about it.
I'm sorry, can you repeat yourself? Someone just said something in my background. I couldn't hear you. What was that last just sentence?
My Bionic Brain.
To go to the website, it's at www.mybionicbrain.com.
Okay, I'm going to check
that
out.
There's a little introduction
about it. Okay, I'm going to make a note of that. I'm going to do that when we get off the line. But I am a multiple traumatic brain injury survivor, and I could relate to every single thing you mentioned. I also have had 6 brain injuries all frontal lobe, and from 1973 to 1990 was when all of those injuries were sustained, and it wasn't until just maybe 3 or 4 years ago that I started to actively pursue and receive targeted support for my brain injuries because I've had mild traumatic brain injuries. Yeah, so we're talking 20 to 37 years without any type of intervention or support or therapeutic remediation or anything like that. And I have been, as Kim very aptly described in her metaphor, about really searching in the dark, you know, trying to find those thoughts and locate those things that we thought we had, you know, committed to memory, but I don't know, it's really difficult. And without going too far afield with that, I just wanted to mention that what I really like a lot about the app that you're marketing and that you created is that it focuses on organization and everything is in one place. And here lately, that's literally what I've been devoting the lion's share of my time and energy and resources to attempting to kind of call. And I haven't been able to find a suite of programs or applications or software that allowed me to do that. And because of the nature of my injuries, I find myself kind of getting wrapped around multiple axles time and time and again without having any definitive focus and direction once I try to come up out of that. And it's very difficult, but does your app apply to persons who are not necessarily looking to return to work as an active versus a deferred goal?
Yes, it does. It works for anyone who has issues around brain injury. The reason it focuses on work is because that's the funding source. It's a $5,000 program.
See.
And Voc Rehab
is
able to pay for
$5,000.
If you're on an employment track where it looks like it would be necessary to return to work. But it's, like I said, it's a very sophisticated program. But you know, and just to share another little story from my past that I think will resonate. I was talking to a neuropsychologist one time who had I was part of a peer support group. This was many, many years ago at our local hospital. And they were building a support program based on the program that for spinal cord injury. And I was introduced to this 13-year-old girl who had a brain injury, and I was, you know, asked to be a peer support. And here I was, a 40-year-old woman, and it looked like it would be a good opportunity. And I noticed that nobody gave her a day planner. She had this big memory book that she'd had from rehab. She was in a walker, and she couldn't really carry it over her shoulder. So I put a little brain book together that was based on the program that I did in my rehab, and I put it in a little Bible cover that had a jean cover on it so that she could put it over her shoulder and take it with her. And the response that I got from the neuropsychologist was, look, I told her and her mother to go to the store and buy a day planner that would work for her. You had no business, supposed to be an emotional support. You had no business doing therapy with her. And I said, but, you know, I had $1 million worth of therapy to put together a day planner that would work to organize my communications with my friends and all that. And it worked for this little girl. But his response was, no, that was not appropriate. And I said, well, how would it be if you had a paraplegic who came into your office and needed a wheelchair? Would you tell him to go to the hardware store because all of the materials that he needs to build his own wheelchair is in there? Or would you provide him with one?
Wow.
And I think when you're talking about putting together your own system, that's really what we're being expected to do. We're told by our therapist to get organized. We don't know how to
do that because
I have been working on this problem for 20 years with $1 million worth of rehab under my belt, and it's still not completely there. So it's really expecting an awful lot from a person with cognitive impairment to build their own cognitive wheelchair.
That's really something because, and you're absolutely right, because I've actually worked within the past maybe 3 or 4 years, Voc Rehab specialist who basically told me that, you know, you're one of the brightest people that I've ever met, but I really don't know how to place you, where to place you because of this barrier to employment, because of that impairment, because of this cognitive,
well, we should talk offline because there's a way to reach a counselor who's open like that.
Right. There's a way to what? I'm sorry?
There's a way to reach them. If they recognize that you have the skills and ability, but that your storage controller is broken, as a software engineer explained it to me one time, if your storage controller, which is a metaphor in the computer industry, is broken, but you are bright and educated and ambitious, there is a way to make things work if you can get your prosthetic storage controller to start working. And that's what it's all about, is prosthetic memory.
And what's ironic is that recently I just acquired a new cell phone, and I did just oodles of research, and it took me forever and a day because, again, trying to do comparative analysis with cognitive impairments where you're not just looking at features of a phone, but you're looking at, well, okay, phone plans and just a whole host of things that go into determining what's the best phone and plan for my circumstances. And when I say phone, I mean features, because I clearly stated over and over, and I hadn't heard anyone use these terms, I said, I need a prosthetic frontal lobe, and if I don't have external prompts, there's no way I'm going to be able to be successful in my world, life, and affairs. I just have too many deficits that get in the way from me functioning at not an optimal level, just at a moderate level.
Well, what you're pointing out to me is I've done a very poor job of doing any kind of mass marketing, because I have not. I've done mostly everything word of mouth. And partly because our software is still in the beta stage of testing, it doesn't mean it doesn't work. It's just that until we are ready to launch the full version, I just haven't been doing a whole lot of marketing. But anyway, a lot of people don't know about it yet, and hopefully they will soon. And, you know, if there's any way I can be of service, just let me know.
I will definitely be getting in touch with you. My name is Allie, and please look out for my email. What's the best way to reach you?
KathyM@mybionicbrain.com.
Kathy M at mybionicbrain.com.
K-A-T-H-Y, M as in Mary. K-A-T-H-Y, M as in Mary, at mybionicbrain.com.
Excellent. Thank you very much. You've been a wonderful guest.
Oh, thank you.
And God bless you for, again, your offering to our community. I'm really looking forward to, and really any person with cognitive impairment, because it could be someone who has executive functioning difficulties from any number of things. It could be ADHD or what have you.
Yep.
But I'm really looking forward to exploring what might be here that can help me, because
I've not found
anything to date that can even come close. So thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Allie. Thanks so much for calling in.
Yeah.
Okay, well, believe it or not, your hour is now 2 hours, and you're officially relieved of duty.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Kim. This is really enjoyable. It's times like this that keep me energized to go through all the craziness I have to go through to deal with all this stuff, because it can be kind of daunting.
Well, as you said, there's no panacea, but thankfully there's people out there working toward an end that will take people out of the dark room and shed a little light and help into it. And I think you've raised some great points. And thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing, because I know this is a real stickler point.
This networking is really important. Thank you so much.
It is. Well, feel better and keep up the good work. Check back with us as things progress. You're always welcome on the show, and thanks for being here tonight.
All right, Kathy. I'll talk to you soon. Good night.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, everybody, that was my guest tonight, Kathy Moeller, and she is a certified brain injury specialist and author of several books, but The Bionic Brain most recently. And so we'll take a little break. We've kept her for 2 hours. Everybody probably wants to let that information assimilate for just one moment. So since we did, she used my own state about some of the resources that aren't being promoted here because I didn't know that they exist. But you know how I love it when we get focused on somewhere here in Middle America. So I'm going to play one of my new artists. A couple of you have heard him in the last couple of shows, but this is Honey Boy Turner. And what else would it be? Honey Boy Turner singing Blues for Omaha. And we'll be back in 3 minutes and 49 seconds.
Woke up this morning with them blues for Omaha. Woke up this morning with them blues for Omaha. Can't afford no bus ticket, sure ain't got no car. Kansas to my south, Colorado to my west, I wanna go east to the place I love the best. Got stuck in Lincoln with the blues for Omaha. Can't afford a bus ticket. Might have to steal myself a car. That's what I'm saying.
Jamming somewhere here in Middle America on Hump Night. That was Honey Boy Turner. You can find him on Reverb Nation, so www.reverbnation.com/Honey Boy Turner Band, or on Facebook, you can just search Honey Boy is one word, Turner, second word, Band, third word, Honey Boy Turner Band. And that's Blues for Omaha, one of the new artists on the board. So excited about him. And I would be remiss, since we have all of these great great hosts from all over the country, I'd be remiss if I didn't follow that up with my favorite 55 seconds that Les Paul likes so much. And that's enough for that. By now, I'm sure you know where your Wednesday night hose tails from. So, in any case, again, I want to thank, we'll do the top of the hour housekeeping. Want to thank TBI, I know you do, Les. Les says he really digs that, so I like to throw that in every now and then. That's Jeremy Partridge, who got together three Omaha rappers, White Mike, and I'm going to have to look up the other two. I said that last time. But anyway, pretty funny video, and it really
really catches you. You don't think it's going to, and all of a sudden you find yourself saying, where you come from? At least we do around here. But in any case, I'll be opening up some mics in a moment after I thank TBI Survivor Network for sponsoring Brain Injury Radio and Lash Publishing for sponsoring my show, Recovery Now. And Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week. All live shows are almost immediately archived for on-demand listening. So if you've come in late or you're just in need of a little support, certainly flip through the on-demand series in braininjuryradio.com. Look for a topic that meets your fancy. We have, I think, about 25 different hosts now, all bringing different skill set to the table, different topics and guests to the table, and I think we have a little something for everybody. So we are available 24/7. And if you are a survivor who would like to speak to another survivor, we have the peer support line. You can find that at the number 4PEER, P as in Paul, E-E-R, 11.org. We'll give you information about that as well as the medical ID card. So I think that that's pretty much the housekeeping. So I'll open up a couple mics for, well, wait just one moment. Let me see. I see an anonymous, and I wonder if that happens to be, let's see if this happens to be our new friend. Alan, is that you? Hello, Alan, is this you on the line? Okay, well, if it's Alan, he dropped away for a moment, didn't have his hand up, but sorry about that. I'll come back and play one of his songs later. Again, if you want to call into the show, this is the open mic section where we just do a little general chat, play some good tunes in between, and you can call into 424-243-9540. And don't forget to put your hand up by pressing 1 so that we know you're a caller and not just a listener. Don't want to catch you in any compromising positions. So I will let on back on. Hi, Les Paul.
Hello.
And
how are you doing?
She's spinning. Hello, Allie. You two had your hands up. So what's going on with you guys tonight?
Hi. You go ahead, Allie. You can talk.
My brain is tired, but this was such a great interview. I'm really appreciative of you for having her on the air. And, I mean, it's amazing. I always say, all in divine order, because this is exactly what I needed to hear. This is the kind of stuff that I've been looking for really intently as of late. Software programs, apps, I've been scouring the Google store. I'm an iPhone gal who recently became an Android user, and the platform is completely different, and the learning curve has been steeper than I had really bargained for, and my little brain books have just gone up in smoke, and I still don't have the necessary resources in the way of software offerings or any type of programs that can kind of bridge the divide. And so I think it's wonderful that a brain injury survivor actually created it, because she knows intimately well a lot of the pits and the, you know, the valleys and the blind spots that exist for someone who may not necessarily live with these types of challenges, but only comes from a textbook model of what does executive dysfunction look like, or what does, you know, various challenges with brain injury look like. And I'm excited to explore the possibilities of the software offering, like I said earlier. So thank you for having her.
Yeah, she was really great. And she's also, you know, not only a survivor, but, you know, admittedly, I think you came in just a little bit later. I could be wrong, but she, she was in a very, very extensive, good rehab program after her injury.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she picked up a lot of things in her own experience in a good. Now, see, if you weren't, like you or I, involved in any kind of rehab and didn't know it existed, you know, that puts you in denial and defers your progress quite a ways down the road. She was very fortunate to get intensive and varied rehab really early out of the gate, and so that really set her up to bring her down the path she's gone. You know, if you go 10, 15, 20 years, for God's sake, before you're addressed to these things, if your own brain injury and the SSRIs after and the frustration hasn't driven you over the brink of insanity, then hopefully you'll be able to learn one of these new apps.
I completely relate. Thank you. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm tired, though. But Les Paul, did you want to say something?
I was
Thank
just going
to
say, if I sounded negative, it was for a positive reason. I don't want to see other people go through what I went through for decades. Because I'll tell you the truth, and if VR gets mad at me, I'll say, I'm sorry. I'm not saying it was her. Tonight, she's wonderful. I thought she's awesome. But I'll give you some examples. I went to VR. I don't remember exactly what year my first injury was. December 18, 1984, when I had my first aneurysm, and I was out of it for a long time. It might have been a couple of years later, maybe 3 years or four. I don't remember the exact amount the first time that I was actually driving and functioning well enough, although I still had an aneurysm waiting to rupture again, and they told me so that it could. I had to be very careful, so they weighed that against me going back to work, and maybe rightly so. But after 10 years later, they did a special operation that removed the aneurysm, and I was able to go. And so during that time, I went to VR. I went to all kinds of disability employment agencies. I went to job fairs. And, man, they looked at me like I was a dead man. I'm like, what are you doing here? Go home, Mr. Morgan. They'd look at my history and say, no way, you're unemployable. And I say, you realize I drove in my car, I'm dressed nice, and I say I dress nice because I would dress nice like a person looking for a job, like you should dress when you're going to look for a job. I didn't wear tennis shoes, and I didn't wear a T-shirt. I came in my dress slacks, and I came in looking like a average, everyday guy ready to go to work. And I would be ready. And I've been turned away time and time and time and time again. And I'll be honest, I don't believe they mentioned CAP way back then. We actually talk about CAP where I work. It's the client assistance program. We talk about it a lot. And we do tell people that when we finish working with them, we hand them a client assistance paper and the paperwork and says, if you have any complaints, come to us first and we'll see if we can resolve them. And if not, here, contact CAP and see what you can do to work with them, to work with us, however, whatever agency, to help you find what you need. And I take those kind of surveys. One thing I love about independent living, we actually do surveys on consumers. You're not called a client. Where we work, you're called a consumer, because a consumer is someone who buys things. A consumer is someone who spends money. A consumer is a person living their life on their own to the best of their ability. Well, you come into Walton Options, and if you sign up and become a consumer, that means you have a self-directive, first of all, and we consider you the premium stuff that walked in the door higher than the highest employee in all of Walton Options, higher than all the directors, everybody. You're our employee. And so you have the right to ask us, why didn't we do something correctly? And later on, I get consumer satisfaction files and it's not always satisfaction, by the way. All kinds of different people with disabilities come into our agency, and maybe a month or two down the line, I'm sent these papers, and I'm the one who does the phone calls most of the time where I work, and so I'll just do a quick summary of it. Someone calls, hi, this is Les Paul Morgan. This is Walton Options for Independent Living. How may I help you? And I, you know, I just thought I didn't say the cat part. This is Walton Options. I'm doing a survey to find out how you like the services you received. And they'll ask me what services sometimes, because even the client will forget sometimes because of the disability. And I'll say, I see here that you received an assistive device for so-and-so, that, or you went on a skiing trip, for example, for the first time, and you count that as being more independent. Do you agree? And it asks, do you disagree? Do you agree? Did you like it a lot? Was it great or was it horrible? And I have to write down whatever they say, and I specifically say, you have the right to complain. If you didn't receive the services, please let us know. We want to know what you did right. How many agencies have you, any of you guys, been on that say that?
Yeah, quite a few.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, you actually get to complain with us. And
mm-hmm.
I've had some people complain, said, well, nobody ever called me back. I'm sorry, they didn't. And I have to say no on they didn't receive services. And because even at Walton Options, sometimes someone falls through the cracks where a paper got lost or something, or their paperwork is missing. It doesn't happen very often, and very rarely, almost never. But there's been some times where someone got forgotten because we're people with disabilities working with people with disabilities. And so
yeah,
it's a pretty
rough.
Awesome thing. Yeah.
It is. Les, if you don't mind, and I see we have some other callers. I'll bring you guys
right
on in just a minute. But I got a request and actually a salutation for you. My mother says hi to you, Les Paul. And she has a request and her phone's about ready to go dead. And since we're on the blues or have been on the blues, and like I saw on the famous T-shirt, and I couldn't concur more at the moment, the blues started when Adam met Eve. But this is one of our blues singers who we have all grown to love over the last couple of years, John Cruz, with John Cruz Blues. You can find his website, actually, www.johncruzblues. You can find him on reverbnation.com/johncruzblues or facebook.com/johncruzblues. And I hope you do. John is also a brain injury survivor with a brain inoperable tumor on his brain stem, and God bless him, he's still got the pipes. So this is John Cruz with a song that he wrote to his wife, who died prematurely when their only daughter was 3 years old. So truly a love of song, a song of love, sorry, I guess I'm getting tired, and of faith and hope for the future. So this is John Cruz with Palm of Your Hand, 5 minutes and 33 seconds. God bless you, John Cruz. You're always in our thoughts and prayers. Always in our thoughts and prayers. Anyway, great set of pipes, great song, and one of a great number of indie musicians on the board. I see we have a couple of callers I didn't see before. Could be my getting old and tired eyes. I've got a birthday next month, and you know, when I turned 50, it didn't bother me, but this one coming up is bothering me. So if I get a little surly between now and about 30 days from now, you'll know why. I'm working through the aging process and coming to acceptance. God, 50 was a piece of cake. I had no idea I had these kind of issues. You just always surprise yourself in life, don't you? You just never know. Area code 424, you're on the line. Who do we have with us?
Think that's me?
Yes, I think that is you, 424.
Yes.
Who is this?
This is Leanne.
Yes, absolutely.
Hi, how
hello,
you doing?
Leanne. Good. Thanks for calling in tonight. It's been so nice to see you in the chat lately. How are things with you?
Yeah, they're going pretty good. And I wish I could have talked to Kathy, because I'm sure she probably wouldn't remember, but about 2 years ago, I had gone through Mercy Hospital rehabilitation program, and it was under the auspices of the Boak Rehab in California.
Mm-hmm.
And my speech therapist, Dodie Newman, had put me on to Kathy, and in fact, I'm still using a form of planner. I'm using it's kind of like an abridged form of planner that's Franklin Covey, and then it's got the type that Kathy was talking about.
Right.
At the time, there was no app for that. She was still developing an app. And so this is just a more or less a paper planner, but it's the Franklin Covey was just kind of like designed based on Kathy's system. And it really, really works. And I talked to Kathy, I guess it was for about 3 weeks. When I started, it was every morning, and trying to get me to be able to organize and instill in me to write it down and not depend on my memory. But her system is really excellent. And I've used it since then, and I've referred it to other people. So,
great.
But, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It sounds like a great way to not only help your memory, but to have it organized all in one place. And I've got to say that neither of those are strong suits for me, so it sounds like a heck of a tool, and I'm glad that it's worked for you. No guest could have any better hope than a positive endorsement like that. So that was so nice of you to call in.
Yeah. You mentioned that you had a lot of post-it notes, or you and Craig had a lot of post-it notes before.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the way I was. I had scattered papers and the post-it notes up. And the first thing that Mercy Hospital did, because it was kind of like it was based on whatever the program was based on whatever the participant needed, their weakest state, and mine was the director of the program and my speech therapist came to my home and were going through everything, organizing things and teaching me kind of like how to live again and how to reorganize things and the importance of writing things down every day. And I mean everything, you know, like I have a cat. What day are you going to change your cat's box? You know, things like that. It was really, really detailed. And but I still pretty much go by the same system, and I've referred other people that have had brain injuries to the same thing to at least use a daily planner. They can use one at work if they want, if they're working, and use one at home, you know.
Right.
So.
Well, now there's some of those things like the cat litter box. You might not need the day planner to know when that's due.
Well, I lost
but
my
it's
sense
a good
of
idea.
Smell. Yeah, I lost my sense of smell from my head injury. So, but of course, you know, I could tell with my eyes and, you know, but it was kind of like in the sense that you do a meal planner, a weekly meal planner, so that you'd attach specific days for doing certain things. And it worked.
I think another helpful tip, too, is just the reinforcement. You know, when we think thoughts in our mind and we think, even like one of the tools I used to use, I made up on my own, was link. I'd call it linking or linkage, and I would take a new thought that I didn't think I would remember and link it to something that was back in my long-term memory and see if I could remember by remembering the familiar that it would trigger me toward that new memory. Well, I think one thing that's really good about what you girls are talking about is that writing actually reinforces the thought. And so, you know, if you can even write down whether it's the linkage or the thought, like you're talking about, the planning and actually going through each note of the day, the physical act of writing, it reinforces the imprint in our memory, and we don't just have to rely on our brain power alone, but the physical task, you know, is just one more backstop for like that. So I think that's wonderful. And well, I'll have to put you in touch with Kathy's email, and maybe you can call, and I'll be sure to tell her when I talk to her tomorrow that she couldn't have had a better referral, call in and talk about her system. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get in touch with her definitely from what she was talking about with Voc Rehab, because I'm at the end of my program now, and I've had similar problems like Les, what Les was talking about. My counselor has not understood brain injury at all. And so I've gone through CAT, used that program, CAP, and God, I guess I've had like three different meetings with those people, and now it's to the point that I became so frustrated that I told her to just close it. But then I've had more opportunities since within the last 4 months, and so I'm probably going to keep it open. But one of my main pet peeves was the fact that Voc Rehab would not give any kind of assistive technology, as even to the point where she would not let me bring a tape recorder into meetings. I had to write it all down.
Yeah, they're so worried about litigation and things. They're torn between the law, which is on our side, you know, through the ADA Act. For those that don't know, the Americans with Disabilities Act, I wasn't aware of it, but there's a lot of support and the law being on our side, and some of these people that give grief and say no when they know that you know about the ADA and you drop that, it sends a little fear through them because that is carved in stone. So, you know, that rattles their righteous cages. So it's good to know your rights. And so that's great, Leanne. Well, thank you so much for calling in. I've got one other caller, and then I will bring you back. Thanks.
Okay, take care.
You too. That's pretty awesome. Guests couldn't hope for a better testimonial, could they? Area code Craig, are you out of the wind tunnel? Craig? Okay, fans, this is a caller with his hand up and a live mic who's not talking, but I'll leave it open. He's obviously out of the wind tunnel, but maybe thought I was ignoring him. So let me see, what time do we have here? We have about 20 minutes left, so I'll see if he's going to come back. And I think what I am going to play is Gary Nicholson, because this is something that we've all had a lot of, and I've had a couple of them lately, that's for sure, both days ways, but I think we can all relate to it. This guy's very interesting. Gary Nicholson has won 2 Grammys, and it's not a name that you've heard a lot, but everybody he's written songs for, which is most of the most famous country music musicians, as well as some blues musicians, you have heard of. This guy's in Tennessee and was kind enough to allow me the rights to play his original song, which has been done by some other artists, but he owns the rights to it. And so a pretty big hitter in the music industry. But this is Gary Nicholson, and I'll give you that information about how to find him. I'll type it into the chat and give it to you after the song. But something I think we can all relate to, good days, bad days.
Everybody wants to know how I get along in these dark days since you've been gone. Sometimes I'm fine, sometimes I'm dying, stumbling through one step at a time. I have good days, bad days. Past all behind, and I'm all right till sundown again. Then I'm right back where I've always been. I have good days, bad days, sunshine and rain. I have good. The nights are Tonight I'll go home to the same old routine. Dinner for one by a phone that don't ring. But what's the use in going out on the town? I know I'll never wear.
Gary Nicholson. You can find him at www.garynicholson.com. That's N-I-C-H-O-L-S-O-N. I've typed that in the chat room, as well as on facebook.com/GaryNicholsonMusic. And you can read his outstanding pedigree. Heard a couple artists, other artists sing that song, but he was very nice to let us have the rights to play it. So I really appreciate that. Looks like we have just a little less than 15 minutes on the show. I'm not reading the thing here. I want to do a little shout out of people that are here, tell the bitter end, and people that were here earlier. I want to thank Jenny, Rick, Stephen for being here earlier. Sorry if I'm forgetting anybody who came and went a little earlier tonight. Allie and Les, who I will unmute. Craig, who had called in the wind tunnel, and we did get him. And now he's been unmuted and for quite a while, and I'm not sure what happened to him. He's still unmuted. I want to thank Leanne for calling in tonight. That was great. And actually, Madeline, I believe the woman's name, the first caller that was on the board. So that's great. And our guests that have been in the room throughout the night. So, you know, I certainly also want to thank my guest, Kathy Moeller. You can find her at Bionic Brain, www.bionicbrain.com, or in the program notes I put down www.cognitiveharmonics.com, and I'll put that in the chat room because I don't think that you saw that one earlier, but that is the one in the program notes. Cognitive, don't you hate to do this on the phone? harmonics.com, especially at the end. But I want to thank Kathy Moeller. Admittedly, I think that, you know, one of the reasons on a show like Recovery Now that we have these tools, the guests come on with the various tools, is that admittedly, and I've always said, and my guests have said, that there is no one magic bullet, but I know there's been a lot of frustration from people and discussion about SSDI and finding jobs and the fear of having to I'll just say the word downgrade because that's the way a lot of people look at it in their own mind, you know, from where they've been and what they were doing to what they're doing now, initially at least. Later, it might be cool, but in the beginning, it isn't. And so there's a lot of fear. And again, that's a time when your bell's been rung, you're less focused, you're less clear, the resources aren't readily available, you're not turned on to them by the professional, traditional medical model that you've been in, and it can be really, really rough navigating the waters. So, but I like to have people come on the show to give options because in spite of everything, it is, you know, to me, it was very helpful to know, and I know it was for Jenny, that you can at least try. It's one more bullet to fire, and I think that's what all of recovery is about, whether you call it, sometimes I call it one more arrow in your quiver or one more bullet to fire. It's too bad they all kind of are violence-related, but that's kind of what you feel like when you go through this process. But, you know, that you can call a state vocational rehab agency, and you can hope that they're going to know more than the secretary at the front desk at your doctor's office, you know, and maybe they will, maybe they won't, but it's one more resource we didn't know about before, just like with Les, you know, I didn't know about independent living centers before I heard Les talk, so now a lot of people have probably not realized that, you know, they're going to have to go from an $80,000 executive position and they've stayed under wraps for fear they're going to wind up in a department store being a checker, and not that that's a bad thing, it's just a completely different thing. And there's, you know, it seems like we always have fear of change and fear of doing something new, and there's a lot of those functions we couldn't do. I mean, you know, most of the things I was doing had to do with talking. It wasn't working a newfangled cash register. You know, in high school and college, it was kind of funny. We had this, I worked in a Indian jewelry was a big deal back in the late 70s, early 80s. It's kind of circling around like everything else is, you know, the turquoise and the squash blossoms and all of that kind of jewelry. And I worked in that store for 8 years, and it was funny. We had an antique cash register that was pretty cool, but it didn't work. All you did was hit it. And those were back in the days where, guess what? You had to know how to make change because it didn't tell you, you know, what the change yeah. was. You actually knew, had to know how to count, you know, and give people change for a dollar. What a concept, you know. They don't do that today. The computer tells them. But, I mean, it wasn't even a regular cash register, and I got to tell you, sometimes I've quaked in my boots and marveled when I've been in Super Target or the grocery store or Walgreens, and I see some of these cash registers people have, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, I've had my smartphone for, I'm coming up now, I guess we're in April, you know, because Gary got it for me 2 years ago for my birthday, so I'm coming up on the end of the two-year contract, and my smartphone is still smarter than me. So, you know, the idea of going from something as heady as, you know, managing people's investment portfolios to learning how to work a cash register at Super Target is daunting. So for a woman to come on and say you could take part of, you know, not the whole overwhelming features of your past job, but there might just be a possibility that you could carve out a smaller piece of the pie that you were good at, still comfortable with, and reapply it, excuse me, into a different venue. And that you're probably not going to be able to navigate all of that alone, that first and foremost, she said, we need an advocate, you know, somebody to help us navigate the waters, somebody who's been down that road before. Otherwise, a lot of us are going to get over-fatigued, frustrated, tired, angry, and just aren't going to want to do that anymore because it's just too hard and overwhelming. So if we have an advocate who's been down the road before coaching us, and then they can turn us on to some things like, pardon me, I got the frog, independent living centers and vocational state vocational rehab agencies.
Sorry about that.
And, hi. You're just in time for the end of the show. We were looking for – I've had you unmuted. Luckily, you were quiet even though you weren't talking.
No, I was on
you
the other line.
In the wind tunnel. Ah.
I was on the other line, so.
Shocking. Shocking. It was good to hear Kathy tonight.
What's that?
Good to hear Kathy tonight. I hadn't gotten the chance to visit with her for a long time since she used to have a show. She's been gone for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I can accommodate what we need, but we'll talk about it. But we'll see.
Nope. No, I don't think so. I don't think that was the plan. Sounds like she's real busy, and that's great, keeping busy. And just put up a new video on the Cognitive Harmonics site, and they're in the process of really doing some tweaking and some changing and getting the rest of that up and running. So I think they've done some changes in the Bionic Brain book, but it's all a work in progress. So that's good. But are you whistling?
I heard
who's
something.
Whistling? Something made a high pitch.
Probably my nose. I think that I'm getting a cold.
Oh, no. This tweener weather is nailing everybody. You know, we had, some of you might have seen, I was like dead and just life in my way and not posting pictures. I left that Kim's, my avatar, you know, my silly avatar. When I figured out this new thing, I've been screwing around putting up these avatar pictures, and I had one where I'm standing there and there's somebody pulling on each arm and it says, Kim is being pulled in too many directions, and I left that there for days.
I like that.
Well, I think that's the longest. I haven't been on Facebook again because that's just where I was at, you know, being pulled in too many directions. So I finally got out the new camera I got for Christmas, Les, and took some pictures of the dogs today. But it was really weird because it was like, what was it? We hit like 60 day before yesterday. That was sweet. And it gave you hope that spring was going to come and this hellacious long winter was going to leave. And then yesterday, it was 7 degrees with 40-mile-an-hour winds and
wow.
Blustery.
What a difference. Wow.
All day long. Mm. I didn't wind up going to my – well, I had some personal issues. I haven't been sleeping very good for the last several days. And I had a bad migraine, and it was my DAR meeting. Dang it. And I really – you know how much I look forward to that. And I just didn't go – yesterday and was a shut-in, and then today it was 50, but at this time of year, 50 lasts from 3 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, right? So, but it's just weird, you know, there's all this fluctuation in weather around the country right now. If you haven't gotten
we
nails,
have crazy
which,
wind right now.
Yeah, you got it from us. We sent it there after yesterday, but it'll leave tomorrow. The good news is it'll blow right out of the country, but anyway, we're down to just the last couple of minutes of the show. But, yeah, this is a rough time. If you haven't gotten the creeping crud from winter, it looks like this tweener stage might finish you off. But I know most of us hosts have, so try to get a lot of rest and take some extra vitamin C and maybe cut back and prioritize a little bit. It's great advice. I don't always take myself, but sometimes, you know, your health makes you. Your body knows better than your mind sometimes, and will just smack you down to the couch where you don't have a choice, you know, to try to avoid some of that stuff. But anyway, I want to thank you all for being here before we get cut off in just a couple of minutes. And anyway, yeah, I know somebody else in there, Allie, wants to get some rest too. You sounded really tired tonight, Allie, so make sure you get some rest. You're not in a warm part of the country either. So anyway, yeah.
So hey,
oh, yeah,
last night, did the studio cause problems?
Last night was Les's show. I was there the whole time. I don't remember it being a problem. Do you, Les?
I don't think so. I'm trying to remember.
Because I was listening on the way home, kind of like I was doing tonight, and all of a sudden that elevator music started.
It did. My show went all the way through. I did have a lot of problems just going on. It took forever to go on.
Yeah, it's like there's elevator music on my end.
Actually,
right about 9 o'clock.
No. Uh-oh, I'm on the 90 seconds. But anyway, Craig, no, his show went all the way through last night and sounded great, but I've been getting notes for the last week that people have really had problems logging on particularly, and Les Paul too. So I don't know what's going on with Blog Talk Radio, and we apologize for any inconvenience, audience. Just keep trying. They have technical difficulties from time to time. Hopefully that's not a permanent problem. But anyway, now I'm on 60 seconds. So thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. God bless. We appreciate your support at Brain Injury Radio. We appreciate the fellowship, and we're just really appreciative of a lot of things. I guess I'm getting tired, but going to end the show in the usual way, and that's with something I believe that we all have, and that is a guardian angel. Good night, everybody. Believe it or not, I won't be the host again this Saturday, so I'll see you next Wednesday. Good night.
Little baby up in heaven says to God, it's your time to leave, but don't you worry, you won't be there alone. You see, there's someone who's been waiting for you.